This podcast is a member of the Place to Be Nation family. Visit us at placetobenation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. Welcome to Place to Be Nation's comprehensive look at the news and happenings throughout today's wrestling universe. Hosts JT Rosero, Steve Willey, and Nate Milton are joined by insiders and guests to take you around the wrestling world on PTBN's Clotheslines and Headlines. Take it away, boys. It's Lariat time.
And
they want to
see me pick back up. And it's the extra. We all are fine. Now I got it like that. Tuck my napkin in. You know good and well that you don't want a problem like that. You gon' make someone around me catch up.
Place to Be Nation, welcome to episode number 19 of PTBN's Clotheslines and Headlines. Yes, I am JT Rosero, and believe it or not, I am back here in the booth for this wonderful podcast that I've missed so much during my sabbatical, my time away. A little refreshing, or you know what? It just always happens to fall on a night where I got shit going on. But unfortunately, I had to miss those episodes, but fortunately, I am here tonight, and I am pumped to be so, because we have a wonderful show lined up for you tonight, and we're going to go ahead and get things started the only way we know how here on Clotheslines and Headlines, and that is to bring in one of my co-hosts on the show. He is the Godfather. He is Nate Milton. Mr. Nate, how are you?
What is going on? Welcome back, Brother JR. We've missed you these past few episodes, and I think we've got a lot to talk about this week.
Yes, sir. Lots going on. Lots going on. And Steve Willey, who's our third co-host usually here, will be here later in the show. Don't fret. The band will fully be back together. He's got some family commitments going on right now. He will be joining us. And we have a really big slate of guests tonight, Nate, because we have Kevin Kelly will be joining us to talk about what's going on in his life and career and New Japan and whatnot. We also have Brad Stutz joining us to talk a little CWF, yes. And I'm sure he'll touch on the Scenic City Rumble that's coming up this weekend, too, that he'll be announcing. So lots going on later in the show, but, you know, Nate, in many circles around the internet, you are known to be kind of a TNA guy, right? You're a TN8. You did review a TNA there, review an Impact for a while. You kind of know your shit when it comes to TNA, sir, and what I'm going to pose to you is, how about you tell me what's going on with this wild week of news, this wild day of news in the world of Impact and the world of Anthem Sports?
Yes, well, I think before we get into the meat of what's been going on with Impact Wrestling, I would like the listeners to know that coming on the heels of what President Dreamsicle said last night in his address, you know, he started this new program called Voice. And so I'm never one to leave a good idea on the table. I, too, have started a program called Voice, and it stands for Victims of Impact's Creative Errors.
Now, let me ask you this, because there's a lot of other rumors swirling, Nate, that you're going to be Oprah's vice president if she runs for office in 2020. Is that true? Can we confirm that here tonight?
I mean, you can kind of read between the lines, because those that have listened to this show know that I'm a fan of Nia Jax. And what does Nia Jax have in common with Oprah besides being beautiful? They are both strong, powerful women. So, yes, I will be on that ticket with one Mrs. Winfrey.
Winfrey Milton, 2020. Let's do it.
But, you know, talking about Impact Wrestling and a lot of the changes going down when you talk about what's gone on just since the end of 2016 with Dixie Carter being moved out, with Anthem Sports and Entertainment now acquiring this company, with Jeff Jarrett, Dutch Mantel, Scott D'Amore being brought back into the fold. We knew there were going to be changes, JR.
Yes.
And this week we maybe got the biggest change to date, and that is the announcement that Matt and Jeff, the Hardys, will not be re-signing with TNA.
Wonderful. Not for TNA.
No, it is not.
But for wrestling fans, it's probably wonderful. Because I feel like, I don't know, I kind of feel like they've maxed out there. Like, I did see some worrying out there in the internet circles that we run in, Nate. You know, are they going to be the same? Is Vince going to let them have the creative control? And if I'm Matt Hardy, I kind of look at the landscape and say, you know what? Maybe a little quick indie run, do a couple of dream matches, and then, Vince, do what you want. You know, get paid. Like, how much further can the broken thing really go? And I'm sure they have some ideas. But at this point, isn't it smart to maybe cash in at your highest point? Like, I know maybe they don't need the money, but...
Right.
You know, it's like if you have a chance for one last run, even if they kind of neuter their gimmick a little bit, should they really care?
To me, it depends on two things. Like, what are Matt's motivations? Because I think Jeff would be cool either way. But I think with Matt, the question comes down to what is more important? Is it your artistic vision and your creative control, which, spoiler alert, we still don't know how much of the broken character they'd even be able to use if WWE were to go in that fashion or right. go in that lane. But also, the second point is, what do you care about in terms of your legacy in the business and also your legacy in the bank? And if he's concerned more about the latter than the former, it's a no-brainer that you signed with the WWE. But if he is an artiste, then I think that might cause him some pause. But either way, I think you'll see them sooner or later end up in the WWE for either one last run or some type of Hall of Fame deal.
Do you think they've done enough, though, for a legacy standpoint? I feel like if you look at his whole career, you know, from where they started, from Omega, right? I mean, all the way through, a huge part of the renaissance of the Attitude Era of the tag division, all the TLC stuff. He had the Matt Hardy V1, you know, bad part of his legacy, but still part of his legacy is all the Lita and Edge stuff, very memorable there. Had another great run where he was one of the best TV workers, you know, in the WWF or, you know, anywhere, maybe in North America for a while there in, like, 2007, 2008. You know, falls apart, falls on hard times, gets this stuff all back together, and gives us about a year of this broken Matt stuff. I mean, or half a year, whatever it is. I mean, is that, it might be just be enough, you know, to look at and say, okay, is it worth traveling around? And maybe they want to. Maybe they want to work Japan and Ring of Honor and everything else, but I feel like they're going to run out of those dream matches, like, quicker than the last, you know? If I'm them, I cash out, man. I make the deal to show up at Mania, and I love the idea that someone threw out in our chat group said, you know, have them do something with, like, the New Day, because the New Day are hosting. So maybe, like, the lights go out and they come back on and, you know, they're at the piano and the New Day come out. You know, something like that. That place will go crazy if they see that.
Man, and I think that would be a great kind of cap to the character.
Mm-hmm.
But again, we don't know, you know, in terms of how explicit they can be with the broken character. Because while Matt did come up with this, it is his baby. He created this baby under TNA's roof. So I don't know if it'd be like a David Letterman situation. Like when he left from NBC to go to CBS, there were certain things that he couldn't take with him because they were the intellectual property of NBC. So it's like, how far can they go with the broken character? Can they use Vanguard One? Would they have to rename some things? Can Senior Benjamin be a part of the package?
Right.
Like those are questions if they were to do this character. But I would love it, like you said, if they just kind of kicked around for a month or so and got all this out of their system, gave us a satisfying conclusion to the broken saga, and then just kind of threw their hands up and said, hey, we're here. We're going to show up in the WWE. We're not going to let you touch the broken character because we know you'll screw it up in one way, shape, or form. So that's done. That's in the past. We put a bow on it, and now we're just, you know, Matt and Jeff coming out to our old WWE Hardy themes and the way we looked. And it's, you know, the broken stuff is a nice thing that got a 9-month run, and now it's done.
Right, and I think it's a coup. I mean, I think it's a real coup for WWE. I think even if the broken stuff can't come, they're still stars. I mean, at the very least, Jeff Hardy's a star. And I think, I don't know if it's forgotten or overlooked at just how big of a star he was when he left in 2009. Like, he had finally kind of reached that point. I do think they're one of the few draws out there available that they could bring in, you know, as free agents. You know, maybe non, like, New Japan division or whatever, but right. Like if they get like a guy like a Kyle O'Reilly or one of these guys that's heavily rumored, they're great. Are they going to bring eyeballs? You know, maybe they get to that point eventually, but I think the Hardys are one of the true people left out there that can still work and still bring eyeballs to the product. So I think it's a signing they need to look seriously at if they feel like they're, you know, they're cleaned up to the point, or at least Jeff's cleaned up to the point, and they can have a trustworthy run with the company. I don't see how you don't, you know, throw the money at these guys to come in.
No, and it would be a good thing for both the WWE and for the Hardys. So as a fan of Impact Wrestling, it sucks to see these guys go. But as a fan of the Hardys and what they've done, particularly over the last, you know, year or so, I think that, hey, man, you have to take advantage of opportunities when they present themselves. You know, if these guys are independent contractors, so you got to make the best deal for yourself.
Right. Exactly. And I think that kind of leads into this next talking point I wanted to cover, Nate, is around, you know, because you said it sucks as a TNA fan. You know, there is a debate out there. You got the side of the people who are always, you know, going to crap on TNA. Oh, look, they can't, you know, this is stupid. They're letting the Hardys walk. What are they doing? On the flip side, there's a lot of pragmatists out there saying, you know what? You know, are these the guys you should be spending the money on? And this goes way back when, Nate. We talked about the shit 08, 09. You know, it's like, TNA, do you need to hemorrhage money on Christian or these, you know, like,
right.
And Christian had a great run there, but do you need to keep paying these guys to come in when they're not really going to move the needle or bring the numbers that you need? I happen to think Anthem's maybe doing it right. Now, you can question the people they're putting in charge, but I think the theory behind it is the Hardys aren't moving the needle regardless at this point. Like, maybe a little bit for their segments, not overall. So, do we look at it and say, that's a lot of money. We could sign, you know, maybe 7 or 8 of these hottest guys on the indies right now to deals for what we're paying Matt Hardy. You know, I think it's a smart way to look at things.
Yeah, it doesn't make sense to invest so much money in an act if you're not being seen. And that is maybe issue number one, problem number one that I think eventually Anthem and Jeff Jarrett are going to have to figure out. And that's the network. Because it'd be one thing if the show was still on Spike TV. Because not only would you have more viewers watching the show, which would arguably mean more money coming into the company, mm-hmm. but you also had a partnership with Spike where Spike often deferred some of the costs. Like Sting was a guy that Spike put money into. When Hogan and Bischoff came in, Spike put money on the table. So, you know, they had a good partnership. Pop TV ain't come with money. So
no, they're lucky they're even on TV.
Yeah, so I think that while you can't knock anything the Hardys have done in this last TNA run, at the end of the day, are you bringing new eyes to the show? And I would say the answer is probably no. Like,
well, and if you are, it's not to the whole product. I mean,
no, exactly.
I watched every Hardy skit. And I mean, part of the reason is I don't have cable, so it's not as easy for me to throw on Pop TV in the background, but it hasn't really made me, like, start getting back into TNA or anything like that.
No, like, if anything, it's increased their YouTube viewership, because
right.
people want to see these clips of what the Hardys have done, whether it's Final Deletion or Deleter Decay or the Great War, any of these other things. But they're not sticking around to see what goes on in the main event with Bobby Lashley and Eddie Edwards. You know, they're not sticking around to see what's going on with EC3 and Eli Drake. You know, they're just here for one thing. And so it doesn't make sense to spend this money if you're not getting a return on your investment. And so while, yeah, it sucks if you're a fan of the Hardys and this character, which maybe can only exist in TNA and on the indies and not in the WWE. But from a business standpoint, and at the end of the day, this is a business. Anthem and Jeff Jarrett, who, you know, despite some of the criticism he may get, one thing you could always say about Jarrett when he ran TNA back in the day was that they were never a company that was bleeding money.
No,
you know, they weren't getting rich.
That's a Jerry Jarrett mentality right there. Slash,
you know, they were never rich, but they were always, you know, they were always up on their books. And so, yeah, it just kind of makes sense to get some money back and kind of regroup and refocus and see what this company can be over the next 12 months.
And the Hardys, too, to go back to them, I mean, they have the money and talent that they could make their own movies or whatever,
mm-hmm.
you know, on their own. Like, they could just, you know, I'm sure they have the equipment at this point. They have the compound. They have the contacts. I mean, they could just make these things themselves and throw them on YouTube or even charge, like, $1.99 to watch them on iTunes or something. You know, like, I think there's a little bit of a market there if they really wanted to go that route, if they wanted to stay as indie acts or whatever and just produce their own material if they didn't want to go to WWE. So, I mean, that's an option, too, for them.
And to their credit, you know, Matt was gracious on the way out. I'm not going to say the same for Revy. But, you know, I think Matt appreciates the opportunity because I don't think he would have gotten this spotlight anywhere else, and certainly not in the WWE, because I think you, A, had to have a company that was kind of desperate enough to give these guys carte blanche, but mm-hmm. then, B, have a company that, while they're not the WWE, their production is still top-notch compared to everybody else in the game.
Right.
So I think it was a good marriage for both parties, and you know, marriages don't always last.
No, they don't, and that goes on to, I guess, kind of maybe a marriage that hopefully lasts. Kind of didn't, though. It's Mike Bennett and Maria getting divorced from TNA, but staying together. Hopefully, they're on their way out as well. Now, of course, I think they have options, but you know, are their options limited? Is there still issues between Maria and the Bellas? Are the Bellas even going to be in power much longer? Because, you know, we know that the match is obviously coming at WrestleMania with John Cena and Nikki versus Miz and Maryse. There's been rumors that maybe Nikki's retirement match. I don't think Bree's ever coming back. So, I mean, where are we at with that? You know, obviously Cena's not going anywhere, but can Mike Maria make an appearance in WWE, or are they just Ring of Honor, Indie, Japan bound like they were before they went to TNA?
Unfortunately, I think there's a cap to how far Mike Bennett can go. And I if they were even to get into the WWE, which again, with kind of the past feelings towards Maria from some in the locker room, which should be over and done with because y'all grown ass people, you know, and this is, like I said, this is a business. So that should be the bottom line. But you know, there are feelings involved, but I think Mike's ceiling is probably NXT. Like I don't really see a use for him on the main roster with the amount of talent that they have in the company right now that isn't even being used to their fullest extent. So it might be better for him just to see, you know, what his options are on the indies, and he can kind of write his own ticket and maybe try some things in Japan, because I do think he is a talented individual, much like a Drew Galloway, who also left TNA. And I think both of those guys would probably be better served to explore their options on the indies, particularly with Drew, who is a guy that I think can, at this point, command top dollar in the UK.
The I agree there too with Galloway for sure. I think he's young though, right?
How old? Yeah, Galloway's still pretty young. Bennett, I think Bennett's might like Bennett's not old, but he's not exactly.
I meant Galloway. I'm sorry.
Bennett's not a blue chipper by any stretch at this point in his career. But yeah, Drew Galloway's still pretty young.
Yeah, Bennett's interesting too because he owns his own promotion right here. It's actually down the street from me. He has the gym, and then it's called the XWA. They actually just bought out like a warehouse or rent out a warehouse that they've converted where they have a they do like a weekly Thursday night show where it's only $5. It's all the trainees put on a show, and then they have like monthly big shows where they bring in big names.
Wow. What if I told you in my best Maxwell Smart impression, what if I told you that Drew Galloway and Mike Bennett are the same damn age?
Look at that. 32, something like
both
that?
Both are 31.
There you go.
But I don't know. Maybe it's just because Drew came in so young that we still see him as young.
Yeah, he started. I mean, when was he in? Was that 07, 08?
Yeah.
Yeah, so, I mean, yeah, he came in. He would have been, what, 23 into Dirty, and he got a big push out of the gate, too. And
yeah, out of the gate.
Yeah, so that's kind of rare at this point. So I think that's probably why he definitely seems seems a little bit older.
He got that big Rene Dupree push.
Right.
Because that worked out so well.
Yeah, who do you think had the better push long-term, Dupree or McIntyre? I think Dupree actually had the better run.
I can't front. I was actually a fan of Dupree and Sylvain Grenier.
Yeah, and then Robert Conway.
Yeah, I was actually a fan of those guys.
They missed out. If they would have hung out a couple more years, it could have been you, me, and Dupree. You know, it would have been, they could have tied in with the movie and done something like that, but what are you going to do? Maybe that was Patterson and what was his longtime companion's name? Patterson and his friend and Rene Dupree. Anyway, that's pretty much all the departures. Dutch Mantel is going to be the head of creative. Big John Gaberick is going to remain in as a consultant. It sounds like the name's going to change. Is that pretty much set that we're going to Impact or getting away from TNA?
Yeah, I'd say pretty much for the most part, that transition has already begun. You know, most of their branding specifically says Impact, and it's got the new logo with the blue owl, which I'm not in love with, but I don't hate as much as everybody else either. But yeah, it makes sense because, again, that was one of the big complaints. You talk about issues that people have had for years. TNA was a name that a lot of people in boardrooms couldn't take seriously.
Right.
And so, you know, Impact Wrestling, like, it's not the most revolutionary name, but I do think it's a better selling point to advertisers than TNA.
For sure. TNA was a rough. I mean, it just made no sense. And it's, you know, I mean, they kind of meant it that way, but not really. It's not ever really what it really meant. I think the name change, you know, there's been rumors, too, that they could use Global Force. Have you seen those rumors that Jarrett may try and push that on there or whatever?
I mean, it's honestly, it's not the worst idea.
No, I know.
Like, how much stock is really in the name Impact Wrestling right now?
Well, you could still call it Global Force Wrestling Impact. I mean, if you really want to keep the show name, you know what I mean?
Right. That is true. Yeah, in terms of the company, like, I don't honestly, if you want to call this Global Force, if you want to call this the Urban Wrestling Federation and go full bore with Bobby Lashley,
right?
I don't think the name is really what is holding this promotion back. I think there is a perception from the fans, and I think some of it's unfair, but a lot of it is self-inflicted by TNA. mistakes they've made in the past and people they've trusted in the past and storylines they've done in the past. And so when you've got all of that negative energy floating out there, the chickens have kind of come home to roost, where now you've got a company that, if you look at the TV week to week, it's not a bad show, but nobody's watching, A, right, because it's on a minor network, and B, because at this point, I don't think fans really care about TNA other than to praise the Hardy stuff or to make jokes about TNA on the internet.
Would they almost? Do you think they'd be better off ditching the pop TV thing, getting off TV, and finding their way onto some kind of streaming app or site, or even YouTube? I just feel like what are they gaining? I mean, they're not getting ad money, right? It isn't pop. Not even no. Are they even paying them at this point? It's not much, right? I mean, so why? There's gotta be a way that they could move to more of a futuristic, you know, platform to reach maybe the audience they're trying to reach. I think the audience that is more likely to watch TNA is not going to be the casual fans just flipping around looking for wrestling on the TV. You know, I think it's more likely their biggest audience is probably going to be cord cutters. You know, wrestling, diehard wrestling fans that want to watch the show, but maybe don't even have pop TV because you need to have a certain tier of cable to even get to that point. So, you know, are they better off just ditching that model? And I know it makes them come off not as strong, but if you're going to slash and reboot and refocus, why not start there? Just take yourself to a streaming situation online, go that way. You still run your pay-per-views if you want, but go that way. And then when you're ready, when you think you're ready, you go back out for a cable deal. You know, when you think you're in position, when you're slashed enough, you rebuilt some characters and your brand a bit, then you go forward. It seems like to me they're stuck in between what they want to be, and right, it's not good. So maybe Jarrett and the crew, maybe they're the ones that refocus, because they've always kind of been visionaries.
Yeah, because I think that's part of the problem is that, you know, you're doing this restructuring on the fly. You know, they didn't have a down period. It's not like, you know, they went dark for a couple months and then came back with this new logo and with this new vision and maybe a new network. You know, you're making all these changes on the go. And so when it comes to whether it's restructuring the way talent gets paid or changing the production schedule or potentially starting to go back on the road as a touring company or negotiating with networks, you've got to look forward, and you can't do the thing that works the best for the short term. Because if I'm Jarrett, and particularly if I'm Anthem, that has invested this money in this company, you've got to play the long game. And what might be good for the day might not work tomorrow. So I think they've got a lot of choices. Do we want to be a wrestling company that puts on TV shows and pay-per-views and goes out and tours and actually makes money and sells merchandise? So it's some hard choices they're going to have to make, but I have faith in Jarrett to a certain point, but most of my faith comes in the form of Anthem, because I think you got a partner that is not playing, that is not in the business to be a money mark, is not in the business to get shine on themselves. They're in this business to make money, and they want to put on a good product. So if those two things aren't happening, I think Anthem will be like, we're pulling the plug.
Right. Yeah, I agree. It's an interesting time, and it's amazing. We're going to sit here again in another year. Will TNA die? I mean, they have outlasted. I mean, they're what, 15 years in now this June? WCW yep. lasted how long? You know, like 11? So, I mean, they're outlasted WCW. They've outlasted ECW. You know, about the same age as Ring of Honor at this point. But it's pretty crazy to think this promotion that just always was on the verge of being on their deathbed is still chugging along. It's amazing.
Maybe that'll be the new name instead of TNA or Impact Wrestling. They could go by, you know, Kick Out, because we always kick out at two.
Right,
it's Kick Out Wrestling.
Unbelievable. All right, why don't we do this? I think we've exhausted the TNA topic for this week. We're gonna go ahead and take a break. When we come back,
you don't want to talk about how Josh Matthews is the greatest announcer in the history of the business?
Oh, God, yeah. I'm glad we didn't record on a week last week when that thing was blowing up, because that was the big TNA news last week, and that was just obnoxious, that troll fool. But, I mean, I know he's trolling, but he's definitely worked himself up to this point now where he's, like, not trolling anymore. And it's, I mean, who's had the worst couple weeks, him or Tom Phillips? I mean, it's pretty rough,
man.
Right?
Yeah, like, when I heard that, obviously I knew, you know, he's having some fun, but, you know, it's that deal, like you said, you work yourself into a shoot. Now he's coming off like a Dylon from the Chappelle Show skit. It's like, who would have five greatest rappers of all time. Dylon, 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 and Dylon. And that's how I think Josh Matthews, when he's at home with Madison Rayne, he's looking in the mirror. Who are the five best wrestling announcers of all time? Josh Matthews, Josh Matthews, Josh Matthews, Josh Matthews, and Josh Matthews. Because I spit hot fire.
Oh, he is awful. So awful. But anyway, so why don't we go ahead and take a break? When we come back, a truly gifted wrestling announcer, one of the best, will be joining us. That is our friend Kevin Kelly, of course. We're going to talk about what's going on with him, you know, his recent moves that he's got going on. We'll talk some New Japan, I'm sure, and a couple other things as well. There's always some fun and frivolity when Kevin's involved. And then still to come later on, of course, we will be breaking down and previewing Fastlane along with Steve Willey. We'll talk a little bit about what went down on SmackDown last night, because that was an interesting show. And then later tonight, we have our buddy Brad Suff joining us to talk CWF. So why don't we take a break, Nate? We'll be back with Kevin.
Promotional consideration paid for by the following.
Voice of Ring of Honor's Kevin Kelly here. I just want to make sure you're all subscribed to all of our great feeds here at Place to Be Nation. Now, it's really easy to do. Just head to iTunes or your preferred podcatcher app today and search for and subscribe to the Place to Be Nation Wrestling Feed, Place to Be Nation Pop Feed, Pro Wrestling Only Feed, and, of course, the Kevin Kelly Show Feed, which includes the full archives of my podcast. Subscribe, listen, and then rate us and leave feedback today. And of course, as always, enjoy all the great action of Ring of Honor Wrestling and everything presented to you on PlaceToBeNation.com.
Finishing, we are back here, segment number two on episode number 19 of PTBN Closed Eyes and Headlines. I'm JT. You already heard the Godfather, Nate Milton. We talked all about TNA, of course, with TN8. Also joining us right now is our third man in the booth. I told you he'd be here. I was not teasing or lying about it. And that is, of course, Mr. Stephen Willey. Steve, how are you?
My nerves are frazzled. There's been a blizzard here today. I'm taking care of both kids, working, and now I'm ready to sit down and relax with you guys. Very happy to be here.
Brother Willie!
Brother Nate, good to hear
from you. I knew you'd come.
been listening to the best of Kings of Sport this weekend, as I always like to plug Nate's stuff. Been listening to on the commute. And it's especially long these days.
Hey, we have a lot to talk about these days.
Did you mean the show or the commute was long, Steve?
The commute was long. Okay, sorry. The commute was long.
I was just about to say, too, I feel like you guys have formed a nice bond with me out of the picture the last few episodes. You know, you guys just come in, you got your little inside talk and jokes going on. You ignore me right away, Steve. It's good. I'm glad you guys are getting together and forming a nice bond here.
We bring people together.
Okay. And speaking of bringing people together, we have one man with us that brings generations and worlds and countries together. He is, of course, one of the premier wrestling announcers out there today, still, of course, working in a commentary role for Ring of Honor, as well as calling some New Japan super shows that are out there as well. He is the styling, profiling, limousine riding, jet flying, kiss stealing, wheeling, dealing, refrigerator buying, son of a gun. I lifted that right from Nate Milton during our break, and that is, of course, Mr. Kevin Kelly. Kevin, how are you?
Hey, good. I love the intro, and I'm going to love this new refrigerator. I can't wait till they deliver it. All the way, I got to wait until the 14th. I'm a little upset about that.
Well, they got to build it custom for you, right? It's a custom Kevin Kelly fit?
No, it's pretty much right on the showroom floor. I thought I was getting the one. That was why I was working so hard to, you know, get money off the price. Like, I'll take this one.
That's the way to go. The floor models never, you know, can't go wrong with those.
No, but then they said, oh, well, we'll deliver one from our warehouse on the 14th. Oh, so I'm not getting this one? No. Yeah, well, you just took money out of your own pocket then to sell me a floor model and then not sell it to me. All right, whatever.
You're the idiot because you're paying way more than it's cost them to make or whatever. So,
well, that's with everything, right?
That's everything. It's Trump's America. So, Kevin, I don't know if you've heard because I know you're in the industry, but a lot going on with TNA. Nate and I talked about it earlier. Of course, they are slashing payroll with the new regime in place. And Nate and I debated whether that's a good thing or bad. And I think we ended up on the side of it being a smart move for business. But what are your thoughts as someone who's inside the business, someone that has worked in an office before? When you look at moves like this and you look at the way they're starting to adjust themselves as a company, are these wise moves or is it a sign of danger to come?
I think that it is too soon to tell whether or not it is these are wise moves. And it is also too soon to tell whether or not this is a sign of danger to come. I try to look at these types of things as, you know, at face value as much as possible, that they're looking at what is going out versus what is coming in, and that they are making just basic money decisions. So I think it's no different than when a team goes on, you know, any team in professional sports goes on a cost cutting spree. They're going to release some, you know, some high priced veterans. They realize that this group has gone as far as they can go. I think this is just a pure money move, though. I think that this is just about correcting the balance sheet. Nothing more, nothing less.
That's the Mets fan speaking right there.
Oh, well, believe me, I've lived with Freddie Coupons as my owner for, you know, 40
all
years.
All about slashing budget and payroll right there.
Yeah, yeah.
Do you see the Hardys ending up back in WWE?
I do. I think that's the – I don't know what their contract situation is. It wouldn't shock me if they're at WrestleMania.
And we're talking about that. I think a New Day segment is the way to go. We'll see. I think it's a missed opportunity on both ends if they don't just get together and make it happen in time for Mania. But anyway, Kev, so a lot's happened since you were last with us. Of course, there was news out there, mostly leaked by yourself, around a job change with Ring of Honor. Of course, you're still with the company in an announced role. But why don't you talk to us about, as much as you want to talk, as deep as you want to go, about what happened there with Ring of Honor, kind of where you've been, where you're going, where you're heading, and what's going on with you in New Japan. Just kind of tie everything together. And then once we get that out of the way, we'll dive into the actual product. How's that?
Yeah, I got a lot of messages from friends within the industry. It's like, oh, sorry to hear that. I'm like, no, this is great. Actually, I'm very happy. All I did was I resigned from my full-time position in the office. And then got hired back as an independent contractor, just doing announcing. I had mapped out like all the things I was doing, you know, in my office role. And, you know, at 11-point type, Microsoft Word, 3/4 of the way down the page, probably in about the 20th entry, I finally typed in announcer on pay-per-views and TVs and selected live events. I was like, this is kind of out of whack. Plus, at the same time, I had the opportunity with New Japan to do more stuff there because they're expanding their English commentary catalog of both live events. And now we're starting to go back and call some stuff from the recent archives.
Is it going to be like the old Coliseum videos where Jim Ross and Savage would call matches that happened when Ross wasn't even with the company? It was all kind of weird.
We did Rocky Romero and I did our first one the other day, and it was the New Japan Cup from a year ago.
There you go.
Oh, great.
So we're not the whole event either, just the finals. But I said, yeah, we should go back and recall everything. And they were like, oh, okay, that's probably a really good idea. We just have to figure out, you know, the when. So that's really it. So now I was telling somebody this for the first time in 20 years, I am just a wrestling announcer. Now, I've worked in the industry for 26 years. So this is the first time in 20 years that I have been just an announcer, and I'm thrilled.
So, and you worked with Rocky this past week too, with the Honor Rising shows.
Yes.
I feel like you worked with him last year when you first started, like he helped with a couple of the events or just joined you and Steve for a couple of the matches. Was that right? Am I remembering that?
He was the third man in the booth for the G1 Climax last year. So we did the three nights. We did the Block A final night, Block B, and then the final. And Rocky was with us the whole time. So I knew Rocky was going to be very good. He's still an active wrestler, so he's not ready to make that transition now. But when the time is right, Rocky's going to be a fantastic color guy.
Okay. So no expecting Yoshi with you anytime soon?
We advised, sad to say, Yoshitatsu is in Mexico.
Yes,
and will not be joining us in the commentary booth.
There might be a wall built, so he might be staying there.
Don Callis is joining me for events on March 6th and 7th, the 45th anniversary, and also the finals of the New Japan Cup.
I got to meet him years ago when
I'm sorry to hear that.
Yeah, but
like Francesa over here.
No, and it was back in like Francesa.
I know Don Callis and I go way back.
In the ECW, they'd have like a little fan convention before the big pay-per-views in Chicago, and he actually stood out as a guy who really didn't seem to fit in there. Like, he was very nice. He was lucid. came out behind the tables, wore actual clothes, unlike Balls Mahoney, who like showed up in his pajamas. And yeah, it was kind of nice to hear that he's coming back. And I haven't been able to listen to the show with the two of you guys on it yet, but I'm looking forward to hear it. He's got a pretty unique voice.
For somebody who was brand new, flew and got delayed and showed up an hour before we went on the air in Sapporo, he did a fantastic job. Then did a great job at Korakuen, I think the night after the next, but then came down with the flu and was in bed for 2 days before we called the Osaka New Beginning event, and he still gutted it out, even though he was sick as a dog. So he's a pro. And I think that he and I just have natural chemistry because we've known each other for years and years and years. So now it's just a question of us and our voices blending regarding the product. So it's, just more reps will help Don as he gets more and more familiar with the nuances, because he understands the big picture stuff. Now it's just the nuanced, this is what happened last time. These are the things that were said in the press, kind of away from, any results, that you could just take from. It's just really being more in depth with the product. But he'll do it, and it'll be fantastic.
Yeah, tremendous, you would say.
Yes, tremendous.
I'll tell you, dog, to me. When I was helping Don Callis, advising him on the Truth Commission.
Yeah, that's right, Mikey. Truth Commission. Remember them? There was Kurgan and Bull Buchanan. Right, Mikey?
I think you do a better Mad Dog than Scotty.
That's pretty impressive. I've heard Scott's. Yeah. See, we just have the Chicago radio that I listen to up in Wisconsin, and they just talk about Jose Abreu swallowing passports. Mm. We don't get to do it. Yeah, you got to do it when you're crossing over from Cuba. You do things to get in the country.
Hey, now more than ever. Brother Kelly, I'm going to ask you a question about yourself in my favorite way possible, and that's by framing it around myself. And when I've got a lot on my plate, whether it's work or whether it's broadcasting or podcasting, I find it very difficult to kind of focus on the thing that brings me the most kind of passion and joy. And so I'm wondering, now that you kind of have taken off some of these extra hats, do you find that calling the matches and just being at these events is a better experience for you than, when you had all these extra responsibilities?
Yes, and that's a great question. And I was able to, first of all, I'm able to focus on it more. Second of all, I was able to spend a little bit more time, pre-event, kind of in the locker room area talking to some of the guys so that I could get a little bit, so I could get some of the answers for the test, if you will. So, yes, and I didn't have necessarily time for that before. Now I do, and I'm making the most of it. Plus, it's just such a it's such a weight off of my mind that now I'm able to just relax and really enjoy it. So, yeah, it's my first love. It's what I wanted to do. When I was a kid, and I decided I wanted to be a wrestling announcer, I never said, and I want to book travel and coordinate, finishes and work on stuff like that and produce segments. I really didn't have much interest in that. That's just what comes with the job. So I just like being an announcer.
Well, our good buddy Brad, he had a couple questions for you too, because he just got done watching the Honor Rising shows that – that you just did. He thought that they came across really well, and he's been searching the internet and found really positive feedback on the shows. And he wanted to know if you felt that is because the fans in Japan now have a better connection with the Ring of Honor guys. You know, a couple have come and gone, doing like, you know, the little one shots, but no, this is the second year in a row they've done this. Lethal's a guy who's been there over there quite a bit. Adam Cole's been over there a lot of times now. Do you think that that they're just becoming more familiar with the American talent?
Yes, I definitely think so. Adam Cole was ridiculously over. They also were, you know, enthralled with Cody, who had only been there once. So it was, are they following the ROH product? I think stats and figures, you know, from web traffic would say no, not in abundance. But I think that they took to people very quickly. The reaction, the difference between night one and night two was remarkable. I felt like there was a more ROH educated fan base on the second night than the first. Sound ROH fans, if they go back and they watch night two with, you know, some specific yay boo spots and some you know, this is awesome and holy shit chants and things like that, plus reactions for the stars accordingly, and Punishment Martinez got some oohs and ahs. Silas Young got a great reaction. So the new guys that hadn't been there before did terrific.
Any big just takeaways overall from the storylines? You know, are these going to be on ROH TV like last year? They had highlights that showed the strong title victory from that. Any knowledge of whether that's going to transfer over for American audiences, or is it just going to be an NJPW?
Yeah, I think it's only going to be available on NJPWWorld.com. A couple of big things to make note of. Hangman Page got a pinfall win in a tag team match over Jay Lethal. That's very important. That needs to be remembered by a lot of folks. War Machine got a pinfall win over the Young Bucks in a non-title situation. So they have a world tag team title opportunity against whomever the champions might be. What else? Adam Cole, Kenny Omega had a little difference of opinion. They may have settled it with Song. I'm not sure, but that would be something to keep an eye on as well.
And what would you think, too, going forward, there's going to be more involvement with New Japan in California. You know, it's already been kind of announced that there is going to be some of the G1 pre-tournament shows there. Are you going to be a part of that going forward? Is there, you know, did Ring of Honor expect that to happen? It's not exactly places that Ring of Honor run very often, unless it's associated with like a WrestleMania per se, but... any thoughts or any? Is this just like a test for them?
For New Japan?
Yeah, for New Japan, yeah.
Oh, okay. Well, I think they're going to take over the entire world, if you ask me my opinion.
Mm-hmm.
The product is great. It translates across any language barrier or any timeline. I think the core stars that they have are good enough, and they certainly can become household names with the more English that is spoken. And when I say worldwide, I mean probably within, you know, the English-speaking world, which is, so if they want to become number one in France, they're going to have to find my French equivalent.
Jean Brassard.
Get Jean Brassard and Ray Rougeau. I'm Ray Rougeau. But it would be, I think they could do whatever they want. And if they want to run California and they want to run New York and they want to run Philadelphia and they want to run big cities across the United States, they could do whatever they want. It was an immediate, and of course they clued in Ring of Honor, and Ring of Honor was like, yeah, sure, that's fine, go ahead. It's, you know, the free market capitalists, go, if you want to, you know, go ahead and do that, yes, and we'll be happy to help in any way. It's a great relationship. WWE took immediate notice, and when the two dates were booked for LA, they went ahead and booked two dates at Corken Halls, or at, not at Corken Hall, excuse me, at Sumo Arena. So,
so clearly a response, you know, not even to hide that fact. And I do like this is, you know, we've kind of talked in the past about independence and some of the smaller companies being able to work together and help each other out, because it only, you know, if Adam Cole is over in Japan, more people in Japan are going to come and check out Ring of Honor and vice versa. And, you know, and NJPW with the Access show is already getting a little bit of people checking things out for the first time. I actually have people that I work with who tried it out, who had never heard of it before. And, you know, there is probably a few guys still on the roster in particular I'm thinking of who have that charisma to get over anywhere.
There's a bunch of guys like that. And when you mix the American stars, you know, that in the, you know, kind of in amongst the talent, whether it's mainstays like, say, the Gorillas of Destiny, you know, members of Bullet Club who are kind of there all the time, and the Young Bucks, of course, who are, you know, Ring of Honor stars, Adam Cole. But Kenny Omega, to me, is sort of one of the linchpins in this. And there isn't one. That you have Omega, you have Okada, you have Naito, you have Shibata, Kushida, Tanahashi, kind of all, you know, mixed in. And there are others too. I think that all of them have equal opportunity. That basically the top guys in New Japan are going to be the top guys anywhere around the world.
Right.
And that's the beauty of it, because it has nothing to do with language. It has nothing. It's all emotion. It's wrestling. So it's just great. And they're very appreciative, because a lot of them have come up and thanked me for helping get them more notoriety and helping the company grow, you know, and I'm just doing my part as the voice of this. So it's wonderful. It's been a pleasure. And we've only just begun.
Is the song saying. So, Kevin, I know you're a big fan, of course, of PlayStation.com. Visit often. As you would have seen, recently just wrapped up our Honor Roll project. We had results coming in, a lot of results, actually. A lot of ballots were submitted. We're ranking the top 50 all-time Ring of Honor wrestlers and the top 10 non-wrestlers in the history of the company to celebrate the 15th anniversary. And I want to talk about that show in a moment. But let me ask you, if you were submitting this poll, if you had the time on your, you know, when you're sitting on the plane for 15 hours, who would be your kind of top three or four guys that, you know, Ring of Honor? Now, it's not just the best wrestlers to have wrestled in Ring of Honor. It's the best Ring of Honor wrestler. So the impact of the company along with being great versus just like a guy who was a legend that maybe was only in there for like a few weeks or something like that. So who would your top like three or four be?
Jay Briscoe has to be at the, and I can't do an order. I'd have to really sit and think about it.
I was the same way. I agree with you.
Jay Briscoe would be at the very top. Samoa Joe. Brian. That's where I start. And then, you know, start to transition into, I mean, Lethal's greatness can't be understated. Neither can Nigel McGuinness's. And that's kind of where I would go. Kerry Silkin is the ambassador now and the longtime owner, is certainly, to me, the most important non-wrestling character that there's ever, the non-wrestling side. Because without him, none of this would have happened. We wouldn't be talking about Ring of Honor.
All right. And with that 15th anniversary show, Kev, what are you looking forward to the most? What are you most excited about? Do you think Christopher Daniels poised to win the title or not?
And, I'm trying not to get my hopes up.
Okay.
I'm trying not to get my hopes up about CD, because I think it would just be an incredible feel-good story. And I think that everything is lining up right. I thought I was, you know, because now I'm getting a little older and I'm wearing glasses, and I had to take my glasses off, rub my eyes, and then put my glasses back on to make sure I had read the right thing, that Frankie Kazarian is now part of Bullet Club. So that caught me by surprise. And Adam Cole's long-term future is you know, still to be decided. It wouldn't shock me if he stayed. I think everybody's kind of written him off and is shoving him out the door. I think he's staying in Ring of Honor. I really just based upon looking at the industry with all the guys that have just been let go, I just see the market starting to change. So I think that some people that thought there was value for them might be seeing that value change, a different number being put on it now. So I think that'll be good for Ring of Honor fans. I don't know. That's the one I'm really looking forward to, the Young Bucks and Roppongi Vice, because I talked to Rocky a lot and he got me super excited about that match. I'm just looking forward to being there and looking forward to seeing, you know, Marty Scurll continue. To me, guys, I think Marty Scurll is he's the guy that can carry this brand for years and years and years. If he's, you know, if he's in the position to do it, he's that good. I think he's incredible. He's one of the best professional wrestlers I've ever seen. Gets it on every single level. And he's a star. At the minute he comes through the curtain, he just grabs you and he doesn't let you go.
Better than Stan Kurgan life?
Yeah. Don tells a funny story about dancing Kurgan, you know?
Yeah.
He told Kurgan, don't dance. Oh, my wife at the WrestleMania party. My wife wants to dance. Don't do it. Don't do it. Vince is going to see you. Sure enough, he's out there cutting a rug with Mrs. Kurgan. And Don looks over and he sees Vince McMahon looking right at dancing Kurgan with a little smile on his face. 2 weeks later, dancing Kurgan.
So that's what happened to Rich. That's what happened to Rich Swann.
Yeah, that's it. Vince is like, who? What's this guy's name? He doesn't have wings.
That's outlandish.
Does
he live in a lake? You're going to drown.
Real quick, though, Kevin, and to that business point that you brought up a little while ago. In the A block, JR and I talked about kind of projecting forward with TNA and some of the things that they're going through in terms of the business aspect of show business. And I'm wondering, for the Ring of Honor fans that are listening right now, projecting forward 12 months. And I know, you know, you don't have a crystal ball. You don't have a magic eight ball in front of you, brother. But in terms of, you know, maybe
I got an eight ball,
whether it's something on the business side or something on the in ring side of what can the fans look forward to in the coming months from Ring of Honor?
I think that the coming months, because there's been some roster movement, which I think is good, because everybody that had the opportunity to go was able to do so. And I think by and large, you know, they're okay with it. So, and Ring of Honor was completely cool with everybody leaving. So that gives some new guys some opportunities. I think that the guys at the top of the card are going to stay largely intact over the next year, just because the way contracts were signed that I knew of and was publicized, you know, before I left, like, the Young Bucks are re-signed for a couple of more years, and Christopher Daniels got 2 years, and Lethal's signed, and, the Briscoes, and, you know, There's some work that'll need to be done with, you know, with Dalton Castle coming up at the end of the summer, I think. But I think they'll get there. Silas Young is on board, and there's a lot of good young guys that are, you know, coming up the ranks, whether it's Punisher Martinez or Jay White, Leo Rush. We'll see what his future is. You know, and to me, and Marty Scurll is the one who, you can kind of build around if it was me, and thank God it's not. I don't have that pressure. I don't have to worry about it.
You don't have to get to announce flying in across the Atlantic and getting there on time.
Yeah, right.
God, that sounds awful. Sounds like an awful part of the job is trying to figure all that out.
I love it.
You don't have to comment on it at all. That's just me saying that.
Yeah, it's not for everybody, but I enjoy it. And, you know, like, I do have to go out tomorrow and I have to get like some sort of seat cushion for my bum, because my tailbone is barking 20 some odd hours on the plane over the course of a few days. And, Japanese beds are a little bit on the firm side. So, yeah, so my bum is aching.
All right, Kev, you know, with you stepping back from that ROH office gig, the rumors have been swirling about the old Kevin Kelly show. Will it be making a comeback? Will it be hanging around? You never know. Is it going to stay dormant? So I thought to, you know, on a couple levels, one, to quench the thirst of those that are missing that wonderful show, and maybe also to, you know, get you in the mood again and maybe come back and bring it back, I thought I'd take us for a trip down memory lane, sir.
Oh, great.
And that is because, sir, we're going to head to St. George, Utah, where a Magna Man was arrested on Saturday by police after allegedly hiding cameras in a St. George home. Jimmy Larson, 39, faces three counts of child pornography, a class of voyeurism, and a third-degree felony of voyeurism. Police said investigators were called to a home on Caledonia Dunes Drive in St. George after the residents of the home found two hidden cameras in an upstairs bathroom. One of the cameras was hidden behind the toilet, pointing at the shower, police said, and the other was hidden behind a trash can, pointed where a person could walk to the shower. Police contacted the homeowners, who stated they had not put the cameras in the home and gave permission for investigators to collect them. According to police, both cameras and the SD cards were collected. The renters later called investigators, stating Larson admitted to placing the cameras in their home. Larson was already acquainted with the St. George family and admitted to investigators that he bought the cameras with the expressed intent to see his sister-in-law nude, police said. Larson refused the content on the search of the SD cards, police said, so a warrant was drafted and approved. The SD cards had several videos of adult women using the bathroom, two videos of two boys under 10, according to police. Larson was released from police custody on a $36,950 bail pending trial, police said. So, Kevin, what do you think of this? What would you do if you found a camera hidden in your bathroom?
I wouldn't be happy. $36,000 bail? That doesn't seem like near enough.
Right.
And for just imagine who when you find out who did it, that's, you know, I'm probably going to wind up with charges pending against me too, because I'm killing that guy. That's just, I never heard of that story before, and I think it's gross. Ugh. He wants to look at his sister-in-law naked. Listen, I've seen my sister-in-law with clothes on.
Oh, I don't know that.
Hey, let me tell you something. She's good from afar, but far from good.
Well, you know, it's weird, too, because Nate had messaged me right before we went on air that he was just getting out of the shower, and he said, let me turn my Skype camera on. I said, Nate, no, we're just gonna do audio tonight, buddy. We're not doing video. So it's along the same lines. So Kevin Kelly, ladies and gentlemen, sir, you have a safe flight over to Japan. On that trip, I want you to think hard about the Kevin Kelly show and what you want to do with that. But of course, as always, you're always welcome here on Clotheslines and Headlines. We look forward to hearing you both on New Japan and Ring of Honor wrestling programs.
Yeah, thank you very much. And the pay-per-view for Ring of Honor on March the 10th, it's going to be a lot of fun. So I'm on that. I'm on New Japan World 6th and 7th. As well. So plenty of stuff and exclusive interviews too. We're doing more cool stuff with that, but thanks guys. I appreciate it. Steve and brother Nate. And of course you, JR.
All right, my man. We'll talk to you soon. Take care. Leaving home out on the road. I've been down before. Riding along on this big old jet plane. I've been thinking about my Spin Nation's JT Rizzero here, and I want to let you know that we have a ton of great podcasts available to you on iTunes, Stitcher, Google Play, and PlaySpinNation.com, and we offer them to you across two great feeds. On the PlaySpinNation Wrestling feed, you can check out Scott Criscolo and me on the Mothership, the Place to Be podcast with our famous vintage vault pay-per-view reviews. PTBN also covers current-day wrestling with the smash hit Clotheslines and Headlines, our steady veteran main event, and the beloved monthly pay-per-view reaction shows with immediate feedback on all pro wrestling super shows. Relive wrestling's past with our monthly pay-per-view rewind series led by Ben Morse, the always contentious Dangerous Alliance podcast, and Survey Says, a fun look back at the good, bad, and ugly of WCW. On our very popular Place of the Nation Pop podcast feed, we offer such great shows as the Glenn Butler Podcast Hour Spectacular, Rank and File, NBA Team, Lucha Undead, Geek and Sassy, and a veritable podcast heaven for comic fans with hard-traveling fanboys, Sellers Points, Todd Weber's Conversation, and Imaginary Stories. Subscribe to both of those feeds on iTunes and rate and leave feedback for us as well. All of these shows plus others available at PlayStation.com, where we cover pro wrestling, sports, movies, comics, plus tournaments and more. Be sure to support our site by using PlayStation.com/Amazon when doing your online shopping, and download our free Place to Be Vintage Vault Refresh eBooks via the links on the right-hand side of our site. We also want to thank our friends at Boneheads Wing Bar in West Warwick, Rhode Island, and Fall River, Massachusetts, TheHistoryOfWrestling.com, and Scott Keats Blog of Doom. Be sure to follow us on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram, and Tumblr as well. PlayStation.com, the only place to be in your pop culture world. All right, Place Nation, we are back here on episode number 19 of Place Nation's Clotheslines and Headlines. Joining me as always, the Godfather, Willie. Hope everyone enjoyed that visit from Kevin Kelly. Always fun to have K-Squared hair back in the house. And gentlemen, as you may know, WrestleMania is swiftly approaching here. We are just about, what, five-ish weeks away from the granddaddy of them all, which is pretty amazing how quickly it's coming. I do want to throw out there, if anyone's listening and isn't aware, there is a contingent heading down to Orlando from PTBN. We have an extremely awesome tailgate that is being established as we speak. If you would like to be part of that tailgate or meet up with us in any way, just reach out to me on social media, on either Twitter at Place Number 2B Nation, or just search us out on Facebook and send us a message to the Place 2B Nation fan page as well. And we'll track you down and we'll hook you up if you want to be part of that tailgate experience. And speaking of WrestleMania, guys, each and every year here at PlayStationNation.com, we launch a giant WrestleMania-based project. Last year, we ranked every single WrestleMania match in history from 1 through 31. That was an undertaking. I think we kind of topped it this year, where we are doing 33 top 10 lists, one per day, kicked off yesterday on the 28th, run right up until the day before Mania, April 1st. And what we wanted to do was come up with a wide spectrum of lists that cover everything that is WrestleMania. So the first two that have dropped were best WrestleMania opening credits, so the best video before the show, as well as best WrestleMania theme song. So those were the first two that dropped on Tuesday and Wednesday, and that's going to be a daily occurrence at 10 a.m. every day. Those lists will pop. We had 10 people contributing votes, and then we are ranked based on those votes. You will see everything that received a vote in the post, and then the top 10 will be kind of blown out a bit with a paragraph. So share your thoughts on social media if you agree or disagree with those lists, and keep your eyes peeled, because each and every week, those will be, each and every day, I should say, those will be posted on PlayStationNation.com for the next 4 or 5 weeks. So that said, guys, there is another pay-per-view actually coming up this Sunday night, and that is Fastlane. And it's looking to be quite the little show on the Raw side. I think it maybe is shaping up to be the best Raw show since the split. I know they've had a couple of solid ones, SmackDown, of course, as well. And the pay-per-views generally tend to deliver when it comes to WWE TV this, these days, especially since they only cost you $10 anyway. But I thought maybe we could just go through the card real quick, give some thoughts, and then see how it kind of ties into where they're headed towards WrestleMania. And Steve, this is kind of a special show for you as well, because you're going to be live in Green Bay, correct?
Yeah, it's in Milwaukee.
Milwaukee, yes.
Yeah, I'm pretty excited about it. And I haven't really been that excited for the WWE product, as I've made known in previous episodes. But there's some people frowning on this card, and I can't understand why, to be honest with you. There's some indie type dream matches on here. There's Big Hoss matches, and there's a match that basically you would need to have a video game in order to program into it at any other previous time, and that's our main event. Like, I couldn't imagine a world where Kevin Steen or Kevin Owens would be going up against Bill Goldberg.
Right.
It's like a creator wrestler thing that you would be doing on a 2K program.
It's absolutely amazing. WWE in general is amazing right now, the way everything's structured. It's just so crazy. But let's run through the card. There's eight matches total, seven on the main show, one on the pre-show. Let's just get quick thoughts on each of these, and then we can just, Steve, get final thoughts from you from going there live. I'm sure on our next episode too, you'll break down the experience. So on the pre-show, we have a tag team match straight out of 205 Live in the Cruiserweight division, as Rich Swann and Akira Tozawa take on the Brian Kendrick and Noam Dar, with Alicia Fox, John Arsenio D'Amato's favorite, in this tag match. So, Mr. Willie, I know you are excited to see Tozawa live. Who do you like in this opener?
I like Tozawa and Swan. I don't know how actually injured Swan is, so it'll be, you know, I'm not sure how much he's going to be able to do. The main story here is Tozawa and Kendrick. Kendrick had been trying to get Tozawa to join him. Tozawa, known in Dragon Gate for a long time as being kind of evil, had a great tag team in PWG with Kevin Owens, the Miracle Violence Connection, I think they were called, and Chad's going to call me probably and correct me about that. And he's just always been a favorite of mine. He's just walking charisma. And to be able to see him live after seeing him in like some dilapidated theater in Chicago in the past when he was first coming up, and now to see him at a live pay-per-view event is quite shocking. And he's been putting on a good show and getting himself over, unlike Noam Dar, who is just there.
He's only there so Vince McMahon can hear fucks on TV every week. What do you think, Nate?
Well, first of all, I'm still kind of recovering from my shock that Easy Lover only made it up to number 5 on the list. But that's neither here nor there. But in regards to this match, I think if they give it enough time, it should be a good little crowd warmer. I don't expect a whole lot, though, just through the way the Cruiserweights have been presented up to this point. You know, it's almost getting to the point where it's a dead horse or it's becoming a trope, but just because it's a trope doesn't mean it's not true. And, you know, that is the fact that for whatever reason, this version of the Cruiserweights is not what we saw during the Cruiserweight Classic. And it's not even the Raw version is not even what we see on 205 Live. So I have faith that they give them time, but that's the big question. Will they give these guys the time required to have a really kick-ass match?
Right. I mean, I think the positive, at least, is that because of 205 Live, they are forced to at least have more than one storyline going. So we have the championship storyline, whereas in the past, that was always it, you know, in the Cruiserweight division. But at least we've kind of had other stuff going on. You know, we've had these other feuds, and really we've got 3 going right now, which is pretty meaty when you look at it. And you have other guys, you know, debuting and coming in. You have the shot of Ibushi, and then, of course, you have Daivari, and you know, you have other guys that are being showcased week to week, but you have 3 main feuds, which was pretty lofty. Now, are they as effective as they could be? I don't know, but at least they are getting some screen time and being able to show off a bit. And you know, I don't mind in theory the format that they do on Raw, where they kind of have one Cruiserweight match built around the title feud, and then one where it's like a multi-man. I mean, I think they're trying to match Nitro a bit. I think the problem is they treasure that opening segment so much that they're afraid to do what Nitro did and just throw out the Cruiserweights to get the show started. Like, I think they think that opening segment is such a hook that they'll never really break away from it being either a major, major match or a big-time interview segment.
And it's become kind of a self-fulfilling prophecy, guys, in the way that I think they approach it like we're not sure if the fans are going to get totally into this. And because they approach it that way, the fans aren't totally into this. Whereas I think if they just, you know, bit the bullet, so to speak, and went that Nitro route and said, hey, we're going to start this show with a 7-minute match between, I don't know, just, you know, Rich Swann and TJ Perkins and blow the doors off of this show, and you're going to like it. And even if you don't like it when it starts, by the time it's over, you'll be into it. I think this division would probably be a little bit further along instead of kind of, right now, it feels like they're kind of trying to play both sides of the fence where, hey, we want to highlight these guys, but we don't want to go too far in showcasing them.
Right.
No, when you have 4 to 6, that's a good take. When you have 4 to 6 guys in the ring and they're given 3 minutes,
yeah,
you know, you're not going to be able to get that. And I think that's where someone like Tozawa or Kendrick or Swan, you know, 3 of the guys who are in this match have the advantage because they do have amazing charisma and can get themselves over pretty quickly. And that might be why you're not seeing some of the other guys right now.
Yeah, and you know, I think in their minds they probably justify it by saying 205 Live exists. You know, so we don't have to give them a lot of time on Raw because it's really. I think they're almost seeing the matches on Raw as a ad for 205 Live. I mean, that's all I can.
I agree.
You know, or at least that's their justification internally. All right, let's move on to the formal card here. We're going to open up at the bottom, and that is where Sami Zayn's taking on Samoa Joe. And when you're looking at this card, it's pretty strong, man. When this is one of the probably opener, you know, opening handful of matches, and this should be a lot of fun. Samoa Joe been built up as the destroyer, of course, Triple H's enforcer. And, I mean, I'm thinking he goes over Sami Zayn here, because I'm thinking they have something in mind for Joe for Mania, but I think this is going to be a really fun match. What do you think, Nate?
Oh, no doubt. This will be a fun match. I don't know how long it'll go, though, because in a perfect world, this would, you know, get plenty of time for these guys to go out there and do their thing. But if we're going by the story that's being told, it shouldn't be a long match. You know, Sammy shouldn't be some pushover, but it should be Joe being dominant for the most part of this match, because he's the guy that is handpicked by Triple H. He's the enforcer, like you mentioned. And so I think it'll be a good match. I just don't know if it'll be a long match.
What do you think, Steve?
I've been going back and trying to see if these two have ever fought each other in a major setting before, major like a Ring of Honor or a PWG, and I haven't been able to really find it. I know they've been going up the house show loop. So it's a fresh match, and one that I'm very much looking forward to, because, again, like I said with Tozawa, these are guys who been able to follow for years and years, and to be able to have a – you know, it's one of more of the opening matches, like you said, but it's still a pretty big match. You know, Samoa Joe being Triple H's guy, he's getting a pretty big push. To see this on a pay-per-view is just mind-blowing for me. Just a couple of years ago, you know, Joe was in TNA and Sami Zayn was on NXT. And if you go a couple of years before that, they were nowhere even close to this. It's an amazing time.
It is an amazing time, all for $10. So, even more amazing. All right, let's keep going on. I'm going to go right to Nate on this one, because it is his girl, Nia Jax, taking on Sasha Banks. They've been feuding for quite a while now. Of course, Nia did pick up the win. Was it the Royal Rumble pre-show, right, that she defeated Sasha clean?
Yep.
Okay. So they match up again here. I mean, I don't see Nia losing. I think Sasha's eventually going to turn heel and turn on Bayley. So I'm assuming that her continual losing is going to be what starts to put her over the edge. So I'll take Nia here. But Nate, I'm going to leave the floor to you when it comes to Miss Jax.
Yes, because she is not like most girls. Obviously, I think this is going to be a fun match, and ultimately it doesn't matter who wins, because I think all four of the principal women in the division are going to end up in a big match at WrestleMania for the title. But in terms of this match right here and who should win, I'm going to go with Nia, because everybody has had a big win recently. Bayley beat Charlotte, obviously. Sasha came back and beat Charlotte on Raw a couple weeks back. And so while Nia has come out and put the division on notice, I don't think she's got really that standout victory yet, the Royal Rumble match notwithstanding. So I think she gets this, and it's one more for the good girls.
Yeah, this is a tough one. Sasha's come up on the shorthand of this the entire time, so that would lead me to believe that she's going to win. But I think they want to have all four of the main Raw women be on the same page, and no pun intended, and have a match at Mania, or at least somewhere down the pike. So I either see some sort of disqualification Nia coming up on top via nefarious means.
And it makes sense if ultimately our goal, or their goal, should I say, is to get Sasha Banks to the place where she's a heel. Because it just kind of adds to the frustration.
All right. Next up is, we'll stick with the women's division, and that is Bayley, our champion, defending against Charlotte Flair. A lot of consternation, boys, around this match, because Charlotte has that pay-per-view streak going. Bayley did get the Raw pop, just like Sasha did those times. But many, many assumed that Charlotte would just regain her title at Fastlane. Sure seems to probably be trending that way, leading to some sort of possible three-way or four-way with Nia and Nate. I mean, Nia and Sasha and Charlotte and Bayley at Mania.
No, you were right the first one.
That'll be your Mania. So I don't know where they're going. I mean, would they cheapen Charlotte's undefeated streak by having her win by a DQ or countout or something like that? Or does she have to win by pinfall to make it legitimate? Because it seems kind of silly to break the streak on Fastlane when it makes all the sense in the world to have it happen in Mania, which makes me question why Bayley won the title in the first place, even though it was a great moment. Should they have saved it for Mania? So, Steve, give me your thoughts on how they handled this initially with Bayley winning? Would you have held off, and what would you do here?
It makes my brain hurt because I honestly don't know if they're planning this stuff out more than 2 or 3 weeks ahead of schedule because of so many frequent title changes. This the Sasha and Charlotte ones, which we've covered, seemed just ridiculous. And we use, you know, the Attitude Era was known for the hotshot title swaps. Well, this is pretty absurd even compared to that, where you have the same people flipping back and forth. And I could see why people would think that will continue to occur. And I can see Charlotte again winning here. But I think a DQ is possible as well, or some sort of count out where Charlotte as the heel can continue to say that she has the undefeated streak. And, you know, it's cheap in everyone else's eyes, but her playing the heel would still feel that she is strong and not defeated, and give her the – and it seems obvious that they're going for a four-way, right, or at least a triple threat at Mania, because there's only so many spots for matches. Unless they pull a 7-hour show out this year.
Possible.
I think that normally I've got an issue with the way the title's been hot potatoed, mm-hmm, but in this case it makes sense. Now, hindsight being 2020, I think they should have held off on the Bayley victory until WrestleMania if you want to maximize that moment, because even if she were to lose it at Fastlane and win it back at WrestleMania, you'll never get that first moment again.
Right.
Yep. But in terms of this match, I think it actually makes sense for what they're trying to do for Charlotte to win. Because if she loses, then that's two losses to Bayley. And she really doesn't have a claim to be in that three-way match or that four-way match. But if Charlotte wins, now you've got Bayley that needs a rematch. You've got Sasha that's beaten Charlotte recently. And you've got Nia, who, if she wins at Fastlane, has beaten Sasha. So all three women have a legit claim to that title. So I think, just for the purposes of the storyline and because the world needs more Nia Jax, I think Charlotte wins and we get that four-way at WrestleMania.
Now, if I were booking it, I would book it merely for me and have Bayley win at Fastlane, just for my own. But
I can't see them blowing off the Charlotte streak at Fastlane. It screams Mania to me. Like, if they haven't done it yet, I mean, to me, I think it happens there. I would be shocked if Bayley beats her. I mean, I could see Bayley retaining if, like I said, if they do kind of the cheap DQ thing where, you know, maybe Sasha gets involved and gets Bayley DQ'd or something like that. You know, I don't know how they would want that. If they want it to be a dominant streak or just that she's undefeated. So it'll be interesting how they play it. But let's move along. We have our tag team title match. Now, a lot of title matches on the show. Luke Gallows and Karl Anderson are champions, taking on Big Cass and Enzo Amore, who I'm told, Nate Milton, it looks like they may be hinting at a heel turn for old Enzo.
Which I don't get. I like this guy, no, and it's no offense to Brother Amore, but he is not. Who's that?
Yep, go ahead.
Who is that? Who sang that?
Oh, God. That was was Dean Martin, wasn't it?
Okay, because I don't know why, but I was thinking Vic Damone for some reason. I think that Enzo,
I mean, I think every Italian singer sang it at some point, but it's
right.
I think it was Dean. I'll look it up. I thought it was Dean Martin.
it's Frankie Valli in the Four Seasons. One of them.
It was by composer right. Henry Warren and lyricist Jack Brooks, a signature song, a major hit for Dean Martin.
All right. That's one to grow on, kids.
There you go.
Enzo by himself is not a good proposition as a singles wrestler because he kind of is lacking in the wrestling portion of that job description.
Is he even a good tag wrestler at this point? I mean, I feel like he's someone a year ago that was like beloved and red hot, and I don't see many people defending it. This is one time Scott Criscolo had his finger on the pulse because he was anti-Enzo from the start, and he looked like an outlier, but now I'm seeing more and more people tired of him. I mean, is he just holding Cass back at this point? Would they be better off just splitting them and letting him go over to SmackDown and being with Carmelo or whatever? You know, like, or let him go to X. I mean, does he have, even at this point, does he have any, you know, positives left for the company?
I think had they not burned him out, and I think they did the same thing to the New Day to some extent, because once they saw them getting hot, they would just send them out there week after week, like 10, 15 minutes at a time, sometimes with a plan that wasn't going to work and sometimes with no plan at all. And there's only but so many times you can expose a talent, even, you know, one as gifted as Enzo on the mic or the New Day on the mic. And so I think at a time there was a time where you could have had Kaz as a solo big man with maybe Enzo as his hype man or mouthpiece, but I don't think that time is now. I think now, if anything, we're going to get a Kaz solo run, and Enzo might end up on commentary when it's all said and done, because I don't see much of a future for him as a solo performer.
Just a couple of haters. What do you think, Steve?
And I've been surprised how quickly the crowds have turned on him, mm-hmm. because it's not just people online. Like, the crowds have, there's even been some slight boos on Raws over the past few weeks. Can't count Green Bay because they probably don't even know he's on the roster at this point. They're 3 years behind the times. But he was exposed the moment he almost killed himself. In the ring, when he snapped his neck on the rope, he was exposed as just being dangerous. And there were a couple times, other times too, where he landed very awkwardly. And I believe they thought he was going to hurt someone. This is just me coming up with stuff at the top of my head. But I really do believe that after those couple incidents, that they kind of pushed him back into more of a comedy talking role and let Cass just do the work. And they gave him that opportunity with the Universal belts, you know, being in that tournament, which I thought was pretty gutsy on their part. But he just, he doesn't have it yet. He's just got the big boots and stuff like that. I think that he needs a little bit more seasoning. I think that Enzo is just going to end up being a mouthpiece for him and eventually going, like you said, eventually going heel.
So do we all agree that Gallows and Anderson retain here?
Yeah, it makes no sense for Enzo and Cass to win, even though, to be fair, like these tag titles have been seriously devalued. Like, I don't think anybody really cares which team comes out on top.
Yeah.
No, yeah, this is one of those belts you didn't have to split up.
Yep.
Yeah, and I think they waited. It was tough because they wanted the New Day reign to last, but I also think they maybe waited too long on Gallows and Anderson. Or maybe it was the way they handled them. I don't know. They lost so much that. Yeah, they finally won, and yeah, they're pretty cool, but.
Well, I think had Gallows and Anderson been ass kickers the whole time New Day was, you know, going after that record, maybe it would have been one thing, but they had him do, you know, the stupid stuff, you know, the comedy, the whatever it was with Big E's balls. Like, come on, man. Like, ain't nobody here for that. And so now you want us to take you guys seriously. You've already lost that good faith, I think, with the audience.
Mm-hmm.
All right, let's move along. Another title match, our Cruiserweight Championship. I think this one's pretty by the books. Jack Gallagher taking on Gentleman Jack Gallagher taking on the champion, the king of the Cruiserweights, Neville. I love Gentleman Jack. I think he has been awesome. I think he's been one of the standouts of the Cruiserweight division. His Royal Rumble elimination with the umbrella was fantastic. I do not see him winning this match. I do think we're setting up to see a Cruiserweight open of some sort at WrestleMania. I do think Austin Aries will be heavily involved in that. They're already teasing him, obviously, with that video package on Raw. So I think Neville retains. This will be a fun match. But Jack is just the epitome of a filler contender here. What do you think, Steve?
Oh, absolutely. I'm excited that in 2017 I get to see two Cruiserweight matches in a WWE ring.
Right.
So I'm hopeful they'll get 10, 15 minutes to do this. I don't know if many others will care besides me, but I will be enjoying this thoroughly. And we've talked before about how much Neville has improved. Like, he went down to Florida, found himself a character, and he's really changed himself completely from when he started in WWE. From mm-hmm. before that, he is a completely different guy. And I give him props, and I want him to go on for a long run with it, because after putting that kind of effort in and having to kind of slog on the bottom and get stuck fighting the dude from Arrow, you know, like, you know, good for him. I'm really rooting for him to go a long way. And I think we might see some of these secondary Cruiserweight guys go away and start filling out your main event. And, you know, getting Austin back, getting Grand Metalik is they've been – the one thing I've liked over the last few weeks is slowly kind of bringing some of these guys back from the Cruiserweight Classic instead of just dumping them all at once. So you can build that anticipation for when Metalik comes, when Aries comes, now that now that Tozawa has been here for 3 weeks. And they can make a pretty nice division out of this.
Yeah, they're well stocked. And it's, like you said, it's cool that they can, you know, they kind of have this war chest to rotate through where maybe you won't get a sick of guys on the main show. So maybe it's okay when, you know, so-and-so is not on Raw. Maybe you show them on 205 Live every few weeks, but you cycle them into the feuds. And I think they're actually close enough to the point where they could have Cruiserweights on both shows, on SmackDown and Raw if they wanted to. I mean, I think they have enough. We saw it in the Classic and all these guys signed. You just mentioned them. I'm not saying they have to have two titles, but you could have them pop up on SmackDown to fill some of that gap that, you know, that where SmackDown's lacking and some of that meat of the mid-card. I mean, they could easily take four or five Cruiserweights and throw them over there and rotate through them if they wanted to.
Oh, absolutely. And then you can just have the titles, title matches on the actual 205 Live show or on a pay-per-view.
Yep. Nate, any thoughts on this one?
Yeah, well, first of all, I think if they were smart, they would have made the tag teams and the Cruiserweights non-exclusive. Because I think we can see that, you know, the tag divisions on both rosters are thin right now. And also the Cruiserweights, I think they'd be getting over more if there were more exposure for them on two shows as opposed to one. But in terms of this match, obviously I'm a fan of Gentleman Jack Gallagher, a.k.a. the Conan O'Brien of the WWE. I think this will be a fun match, but ultimately Neville wins. I do think Gentleman Jack will have a spot down the road, maybe on a UK tour or something like that, because I think the guy is working his ass off, and the character work is something that most of the Cruiserweights either haven't done yet or haven't been allowed to do because of their lack of TV time. He's going to be a good one down the road, but right now it makes sense for Neville to keep this and keep this run going.
Well, I'll tell you this. He's got a good legacy for guys that use classical music. You had Triple H way back in the day, Daniel Bryan, and now Jack Gallagher. So maybe there's something to it. Maybe we'll get a push based on that.
All right, and he does offensive moves with umbrellas, so he's got you know, a little bit of Willow in him as well.
A little Rihanna. all right, so two more to go here. A non-title match, but a big one. We have Roman Reigns taking on the suddenly red-hot Braun Strowman. You know, a year ago, people were fretting at the idea that this could be the SummerSlam title match, and now, like, we're frothing for this bout at Fastlane. as Jordan Duncan will gladly tell you, though, this seems like they've booked themselves into a corner, because how can you have Braun lose? But you can't have Roman lose. He's fighting The Undertaker at WrestleMania. So where are you at? Hopefully some kind of schmoz where both guys just kick the shit out of each other and it ends in a wild brawl double DQ. I think that's the way to go. I do think there's a way you could tell the story to have Braun defeat Roman Reigns, and then Reigns kind of puts it on himself to say, like, I need to be Undertaker to salvage my career. And then he goes on, and if I'm them, I have him beat the Undertaker. If I'm him, I have them turn him heel and win the title the next night on Raw. But that's neither here nor there for right now. I think for this show here, we either get a schmoz or a Braun win. I would be surprised, which is crazy to say, but I would be surprised at this point if Roman Reigns beats Braun Strowman, only because they've shown the propensity to beat Roman Reigns clean. Like, they don't care how much this guy loses. We talked about this a ton on our Hot Takes on Cold Issues special last week with Scott Keith and James Dixon and Jordan. You know, for a guy that everyone bitches about being pushed down their throats and everything else, this guy loses a fucking ton. Braun Strowman has yet to lose. So, you know, who's the guy they're more comfortable booking to lose? Roman Reigns. So I'm going with Braun Strowman. I think even though Reigns is going on to fight The Undertaker, I don't think they give a shit if he loses. What do you think, Nate?
I think we're going to get a schmoz here because, yes, while Braun has been hot lately, this is kind of like Vince McMahon is reverting back to 10-year-old Vinnie Mac, and he's got his two favorite toys to play with, and he can't choose which one of his favorite toys gets to go over. So I think we're going to get some type of schmoz where both guys stay strong because, you know, there is something for Roman that we're leading to for WrestleMania. Whereas with Braun, we don't know with this guy yet. And it's not to say that he won't have a high profile match, but just right now with the card that is being reported or rumored, he doesn't really have a big spotlight match. So I think for the purposes of leading to WrestleMania, it makes sense to do something where both guys look strong. They beat the hell out of each other, and you know it goes too far. And maybe then you could tell the story of Roman being frustrated that, you know, he's out of the title picture. He wasn't able to beat Braun straight away. He's doubting himself. And then, you know, he's out here giving a promo 1 week and the lights go out. And we get a little dead man interaction. So I'm going with a no finish, Brother Willie.
My hope being alive is that this is the giant fight all over the arena, tables being thrown off stages, fireworks going off on people, jumping out of the stands, just your old classic brawl between two hosses. I don't know if we're going to get that. Really, this is a match where I don't know if it matters who wins. I can see your point, JR, about, you know, Braun being the one who is booked so strongly and Roman losing really since the three-way with Brock and Seth Rollins. Kind of since then, he's
a jobber. He's a high-profile jobber.
Like a 50-50. And
loses a ton. Clean.
Yeah. And he's getting some sympathy now. Mm-hmm. He's starting to get some people behind him. As he was booed at the beginning of Raw this week, but by the end of the show, people were chanting his name. Again, it's Green Bay, Wisconsin. Yeah, the mullet is still seen regularly at Taco Bell. So
never forget the home of Mr. Anderson.
Yes.
I do have thoughts on how I believe this should go. We'll get to them after this next match because it all ties in together. And that is our WWE Universal Championship match between Kevin Owens, our champion, and Goldberg. Of course, Owens more serious now, more focused with the breakup of Jericho. And he will be defending against Goldberg. And this is another tough one to call. I've seen people suggest that maybe Brock would interfere and cost Goldberg the match. But that doesn't make sense to me. Because wouldn't Brock want Goldberg to be champion for their bout at Mania, which is already locked in? I think it's more likely that Jericho interferes and either costs Owens or attacks Owens and causes him to retain. I'm of the belief that Goldberg Brock does not need the world title involved. I'd much rather see Owens and Jericho fight for the world title at WrestleMania. That said, I'm thinking Goldberg probably wins, which puts another conundrum in place because you're really going to put the title back on Brock Lesnar. And I never thought I'd be sitting here saying that, but he's not staying around. So what are you going to do? We're going to let the title again go out. We're going to do the same thing we did a couple years ago. Just exactly the same. So I don't know. I just think there's so much more money in Goldberg than there is in Brock Lesnar at this point that if you have to have Goldberg beat Kevin Owens here for the title, I would have Goldberg freaking beat Brock again at Mania. Mm-hmm. To me, that's where the money is. The money's not in beating Brock anymore. The money's in beating Goldberg. And having Brock beat him is completely counterproductive to anything if they do it at Mania. Because now you get two guys who sure mean something, but it's just not the same. And this is where my big fantasy booking thread all comes into fruition. Where I have Roman Reigns lose to Braun Strowman. Slowly questions himself over the next 5 or 6 weeks, and that's why he fights The Undertaker. I'm going to prove that I'm not a choker. I'm going to beat The Undertaker at WrestleMania. Goldberg goes on and defeats Brock Lesnar, retains the world title. The next night on Raw, Reigns either had turned heel after beating The Undertaker or turns heel that night on Raw and is Stephanie McMahon's new handpicked ace or whatever. Is a fuck you to Seth Rollins. Mick Foley gets fired, and then Roman Reigns defeats Goldberg in the main event of Raw that night to win the world title as a heel with Stephanie McMahon. That's how, if you want to salvage Reigns and make Goldberg be worth something, that's what I do. And then you already have your number one contender and a face, Braun Strowman, because he beat Reigns at Fastlane. So there you go. It all comes together. What do you think, Nate?
I was with you up until that last part.
He's over. He's over. Turn him. He's over.
Everything else was golden, though. But, yeah, I think in a perfect world, in a perfect world run by smart fans, quote-unquote, or internet fans or hardcore fans, Kevin Owens would be Goldberg, straight up clean in the middle of the ring. But this is not that world.
Right.
Obviously, Goldberg is the guy who, while he's only here for the short term, I think there is more invested in him at this point than Kevin
Owens.
He has
been awesome.
I agree. Yep. And
to his credit, he has been great in the ring, even though it's been short spurts. And maybe even more impressive, his mic work has been improved. since the last time we saw him. So I wouldn't take that away from Goldberg. I think Goldberg beats Owens rather decisively. I don't care if they have Jericho interfere. Obviously, you still have an issue with, well, if he wants to fight Owens, wouldn't he want to fight Owens with the title? But you can make it like Chris is so petty at this point that he's like, okay, you cost me my friendship. I'm going to cost you the thing you love the most, and that's the title. And it's an easy way around it. But at the end of the day, I think it just makes sense. Even though the Goldberg-Brock feud doesn't need the belt, it just makes sense for it to include the belt because it's raising the stakes again, you know, over the match that they had at was Survivor Series.
Yep.
The match of Survivor Series, you know, you're raising the stakes and you're adding a new wrinkle on this. And I think it, when it's all said and done at the end of the fast lane, Bill Goldberg will be your new Universal Champion. So, and it just makes sense though, because he was the Universal Soldier. So it all ties back together.
What do you think, Steve?
I can't top any of these. You know, I said, you know, weeks ago when we were, you know, we were talking in our chats because people are starting to say, no, I could see a DQ finish. And I'm like, well, yeah, a month ago, you could see a DQ finish because of the Owens and Jericho. That match has been, you know, rumored since they got together. When are they going to break up? They had it for months. They split a few weeks ago. It seems that could be a viable way to end a show by Jericho attacking Owens, therefore Goldberg wins the match via DQ. Goldberg gets pissed, destroys both of them, spear, jackhammer to both of them, stand strong in the middle of the ring, end of show. I can just as easily see Owens running around the ring, stalling, and as soon as he gets in the ring, gets spear, jackhammer, 1, 2, 3, Goldberg's a champ. I think those are the only real two ways to deal with this. If it were me booking, I would, again, book for what I would want to see, and that would be Owens versus Jericho at Mania and letting Jericho get his last shot with the run because I think he's earned it. And do just Goldberg and Brock and let the two of them kill each other. And
the best Mania title match is the one that have earned the Mania title slot. You know what I mean? Like, I mean, I guess Goldberg-Brock's been running for a while, but it hasn't included the title. To me, Jericho-Owens has been centered around the world title since they started. There's so much heat. Everyone, that turn was great. And I hope they just do it. But again, I can't fault them because Goldberg has been so awesome, and that's such a big match. But I feel like Owens and Jericho have really earned the right to have that title be part of their feud at Mania.
Absolutely. That would... I think that would be a match that a lot of people would look forward to in a, you know, these last couple of years in WrestleMania, there have been a few stinkers where they've just thrown the guys together in hopes of getting casual fans to join in, to search it out. And my conspiracy theory is just to let the McMahons take home a little bit more of the money.
Well, there's your fast lane. We will see what happens in 2 weeks' time. Steve will give you thoughts on being there live. We'll have more of a picture into WrestleMania. But we have a couple minutes left here on this segment. I want to just quickly talk about last night's SmackDown. Some big things popping. It was really hyped up, almost like a mini pay-per-view with the card they put together. But to me, the two big segments that really stood out were John Cena being on Miz TV and then the main event interview. Well, I guess, I mean, in the Triple Threat, too, where... the match between AJ Styles and Luke Harper, where AJ won to put himself into the title match with Bray Wyatt, and then the closing segment where Randy Orton showed that he was in a ruse the whole time, said he wants to come back and get his title shot that he earned at the Rumble, and then he lit up Bray Wyatt's cabin like it was Mr. Ross's cabin with a cigar. But, you know, Nate and I were talking about this off air, Steve. You know, the Orton thing, how do you see this all playing out? So do we have the three-way as Styles part of it? Does Shane pull Styles out to screw him, setting up Shane and Styles, which has been long rumored? And then if we do get Orton and Bray, who's the face, who's the heel? Because if you look at how last night played out, Bray, you know, they basically called him a murderer who killed his sister and buried her under the cabin. But then Orton burns the cabin down and his sister's bone, and Bray is left to be sympathetic, like weeping in the ring. So, I mean, who is the face in this whole thing, Steve, if it is just a one-on-one match?
Let me not answer that question.
Okay.
And just take a little side. I don't think they know. I honestly don't think they figured it out yet. And the clues that I have for that is when they go to Talking Smack and they will ask Daniel Bryan, so who's going to be the number one contender? And the poor guy is just left to hang out to dry and clearly say, like, I don't know. And he's like the guy who is supposed to be the general right. manager. And Shane hasn't said anything either on the show. Like, they clearly don't know what the answer is. They don't know what the plan is going forward. And so if they don't, if Shane doesn't, you know, does the writing team, does Vince know? Are they just going to determine it based on what kind of pops people are getting at this point? That is my true belief, and I think it makes Shane and Brian look stupid.
Nate, what'd you think of the segment? I'm sorry, Steve, go ahead.
Trying not to like throw shade at people, but it's hard sometimes. I think that this was really poorly done. I think that they could have stretched this out over many
weeks. Like 6 weeks off the TV.
Yeah, Nate. You know, I've been listening to your Keep It 2000 show, and I like to keep those plugs going. And you guys talked about how, and especially in the first couple episodes of 2000, when Russo was still around, that they would put 6 weeks of segments into one segment for each character, and so you had 6 weeks, and it just was rapid fire, and that you could have stretched that out over months of time. And I thought that's what they were going to do with this. There had never seemed to be – I've watched SmackDown, not all of them, but pretty much every other one. There has not been any sign of tension. Orton has saved Bray many times. He's gone up against Harper. I guess you can say that Bray helped him in the Royal Rumble. But what is the point of Randy Orton having this ruse? It doesn't – seem like there is one. He already has the number one contender spot.
Well, the ruse did start before he won the number one contender slot, right? So it's not like he befriended him after the Rumble. I mean, I think what the story will be is that he wanted to destroy Bray Wyatt and his family and then just like break him mentally. So I think what they'll say is he infiltrated to get Luke Harper and Rowan or whoever, you know, break up the family so Wyatt's all alone. And then he wanted to get close enough to him to find out what could be the hook to really break him down. And then he ended up figuring out this Sister Abigail stuff. The only weak part of this whole thing is that he wasn't champion. So he's not like he was going for the belt. But they could just say, well, that was a happy – I was waiting to pick my spot. And now that you're a champion, this was my spot. So, I mean, they could say something like that. Just my thought.
Man, there's a lot to unpack here. And I think, first of all, Justin, I will go on record as saying this, and I think the listeners will concur. If we don't end this segment going out to some talking heads, then we all lose.
I was going to do that to Morey.
But, man, this doesn't make any sense to me. I mean, the part that you're saying, it does make sense going by the storyline, but to do everything in kind of one night, doesn't make sense to me, you know, when you've got a month and a half worth of television still to fill. You know, to me, it would have made more sense if, you know, we got the breakup and then we got the escalation and then Randy Orton sets fire to somebody's house. But to have everything happen in one night and then have a situation where at the end of the show, it's not me going, all right, Randy, good for you. And it's not me going, oh, man, I feel bad for Bray. It's me sitting there like, both of these guys are pretty unlikable. And I don't give a damn which one wins. And frankly, if it were a perfect world, if I had the Steve Willie magical booking pen, AJ Styles.
Yeah.
AJ Styles would still be the champion.
Right.
Because it doesn't make sense. And now, obviously, I don't think AJ is going to get the belt back. I think this is all a setup for Shane and AJ, which, again, why? Like, that's not something I think anybody was asking for. And that's not a slight on Shane McMahon, because I do think he has his place on the show. But not with the guy that has been SmackDown's MVP and dare I say, the WWE's MVP for the last year. So this is an angle that I think could be interesting, but the way they're telling the story right now, to me, it is more confusing than interesting. And since Steve brought up Keep It 2000 with my co-host Brian Mann, a former WWE writer, one of the things Brian always brings up is you can be complicated, or you can be complex without being complicated. And I think this angle is trying to go for complex, but at least as far as what we saw this week on SmackDown, it's coming off more complicated to me.
And you could have done that whole thing and had that, because the vision was cool with his doing his sign in front of the burning cabin. But you could have done that even the Tuesday before Mania and be like,
right.
Hey,
that's
guess what?
Shot, yeah.
Yep.
Yeah, I am coming for you. I am coming for the title. And so whomever, you make that your triple threat, whether it's AJ or Harper or whatever, you make that your triple threat and, Bray sitting there in the ring with his eyes wide open crying, and that's your go-home. It's not like you're going to be getting pay-per-view buys here in the last 5 days. you're getting network buys that are going to be either they're hooked up or they're not hooked up at that point.
Right. And I mean, one of the maybe selling point was that John Cena Miz segment last night as well. I thought it was, really well done. Both guys were, hitting each other pretty hard with some truth bombs. And Cena had maybe the line of the night where he said, if I really had the stroke you claim I have, I wouldn't be here with you. I'd be with The Undertaker at WrestleMania. So,
so cold.
I mean, that was such a burn.
It's so cold.
But it's true. I mean, it's true. And,
that was great.
I don't mind this match. I think it's a Cena match. Like, Miz has been well improved. I think Miz deserves to have a big-time WrestleMania match with the year he's had. I still think, and I've said it from day one, that Daniel Bryan will be involved in this thing somehow. I said it'd be Bryan Miz, but I do think Bryan will end up being the referee in this match and get a shot in the Miz. There's too much there not to have him, do something to Miz physically. So I do think that something could occur on that level. But it'll be a lot of fun. We'll talk about that more. I just saw that segment was at least worth mentioning. But we are out of time in this segment, guys, because we do have a couple of guests standing by waiting for us. So why don't we go ahead and duck out. When we come back, Brad Stutz will be here talking a little CWF, and then we're going to wrap things up on this episode of Clotheslines and Headlines. And I am really sad that we didn't hear Bray Wyatt yelling, "Mike Cubans," as that cabin burnt down.
And pointing to the WrestleMania sign.
When the stars make you drool, just like a pasta fazool, that's amore. When you dance down the street with a cloud at your feet, you're in love.
PWO PTBN Feed has changed its name, now known simply as Pro Wrestling Only, so it should be easier to find and indeed to say. All of your favorite shows are still here, including Where the Big Boys Play, Letters from Kayfabe, Titans of Wrestling, Tag Teams Back Again, This Week in Wrestling, and many, many more, including our full archives of tremendous content. So make sure you subscribe to the Pro Wrestling Only feed today.
Placement Nation, we are back here to wrap up Clotheslines and Headlines episode number 19 with one of my favorite segments, of course, each and every time these guys are on. And we have two guests with us tonight, Steve and Nate, to talk throughout this last segment. And we're going to kick things off by bringing in our good pal, the one of the co-hosts of the now late Titans of Wrestling, but you can still hear him on formerly This Week in Wrestling, but now it's a couple of different shows. I'm going to let him explain because they split off and they're both awesome, and I want him to delve into the details there. And of course, you do hear him as a guest very often, kind of our, maybe if Glenn Butler's our fourth Freebird, I guess this guy's our fifth. I know there weren't that many, but he's there.
Hey, he's an Armstrong in a mask.
Like somebody's got to be a Rocky King.
Or Brad
Street. I know,
Street.
Man. I'm like, Fantasia.
There you go. And that is Pete Schermacher. Pete, how are you, sir?
Hey, great, man. How's everyone doing?
Good, good. Do you want to, let's save the, we can save the plugs for the end. You can talk about the two new shows before we wrap things up.
Sounds good.
Sound good? All right. And, of course, if Pete's here, you know that's because it's a topic that, of course, he is an expert on, and we want him to lead the discussion. And that is, of course, because maybe we have the actual Brad Street, and that is Brad Stutz, the man behind the CWF, one of the best announcers in wrestling today, and, of course, a great Twitter follow and our close friend here and a regular guest on Closing Night Headlines. Stutzy, how are you tonight?
I'm wonderful. Thank you guys so much for having me. And yeah, it's an exciting week. So I'm happy to be able to talk about everything that's going on.
Awesome. And Pete, we're going to let you go ahead and take the reins on this one, and we'll dive in where we can.
Sounds great. Thanks a lot, Brad. Hey, now Battlecade was a success on like both fronts in that it drew well and was really aesthetically like everyone really enjoyed the wrestling on the show. How did it feel when it was over for you?
Mission accomplished. It felt like a home run. And I think that's due to the crew. That's due to the guys. We can plan a perfect picnic, but we can't predict the weather. And so I was thrilled to see everything on that card come together. You know, Chet Sterling against Lee Valiant and the culmination of their issue, and Mecca and Biggs against Dan O'Hare and Schlack from CZW. And there was just so much up and down that card that I was so into and so excited to see come to fruition. Nothing more so than the main event. I thought Trevor Lee and Brad Attitude knocked it out of the park. And, you know, at an independent level, when you run so many shows and so frequently, it can be a gamble to say, okay, we're gonna keep these people apart for 6 months and let this issue sort of stew. And hopefully by the time it comes to fruition, it'll be great. And it was. They killed it. I thought it was a home run show all the way around.
Yeah, that final match actually made my top 10 matches of the year and actually knocked out the Scenic City Invitational main event from last year as my number 10 match of the year. And it had great storytelling, great action, and it was executed perfectly, just much like the show. I just want to praise all you guys. Now, Johnny Filipovich, he did that great video package for the Trevor Lee and Brad Attitude video build-up. Do you think we'll see more of Johnny's videos on CWF Mid-Atlantic?
I think that's a strong possibility. I think, he's become a great friend to the brand and a great ambassador for CWF Mid-Atlantic. And, we've had some conversations where I pretty much told him, you know, anything that captures your imagination that you want to devote your talents to, you know, he's got carte blanche to use the footage and to create, because I think he's got a really, really good knack for that stuff, a really good eye and mind for that. And I think you'll see some more Johnny P hype reels coming up pretty soon on CWF Mid-Atlantic, actually.
Awesome. Now back to Battlecade. We see the ripplings from the show still happening now on the television. For instance, the Osiris and Smith Garrett feud is really, really simmering right now. The Lee Valiant selling the neck from the Avalanche Pie Driver played into the finish in the main event of last week's show that you guys really did a great job calling it and leading us. If you didn't see that show, if you didn't see the Battlecade, you understood exactly what was going on. How far is like all the booking decisions like prepared when you're going for the big picture of the promotion?
There's really no hard and fast, you know, set guidelines. As a rule, I like to know what December is going to be by June and vice versa. Because we've always used Absolute Justice in June as sort of like the SummerSlam, sort of speak, of the schedule. And so just as a nice rule of thumb, I like to have big picture stuff for June by the time we get to December and December's ending, and vice versa. I like to have the big picture stuff for December by the time we get to June. Everything else, you know, it's kind of it's a journey, it's a destination, and there's a lot of instances where, you know, if you're driving around in your neighborhood and you're trying to get, you know, someplace, you know the destination, and there's always those instances where, you know, you can take this route or you can take that one. You can turn here or you can turn there, and you'll more or less end up in the same destination more or less in the same amount of time. I think the organizational structure of what I do is very similar to that. It's, you know, I know that we're going to, you know, end up at this, or I don't know, but in theory, I know we're going to end up at this destination, and the paths that we can potentially take to get there are pretty plentiful. So there's a lot of twists and turns, and there's a lot of, you know, we do between 30 and 40 live events a year. So there's a lot of stuff that comes up and changes that have to be made and thinking on the fly. And quite frankly, having to make, you know, chicken salad sometimes. But to some extent, that's kind of part of the fun is feeling that energy and rolling with the punches and, you know, saying that this is the path we're going to take now. This is, you know, something that we didn't necessarily set out to do, but it's more exciting or more interesting or more whatever than the original idea. So we're going to go with it.
Yeah, because it seems like you guys' timing is really good on when it comes to the booking of the programs, where things like are peaking right when you want them to peak, and they're simmering where you want them to simmering, or they're building where you're wanting them to build, where there's a lot of things going on at once, and then you guys use I use the term umbrella storytelling. Like an example would be on last week's show where you had the six man, and you were able to touch on different storylines just in one match. Is that something you like focus on, or is that just something that just naturally happens organically?
A little bit of both. It's definitely a goal. It's definitely something that I focus on. But then sometimes there's just these great, you know, situations that present themselves that I never even considered until I looked at them. I think the thing that helps us kind of know when to simmer and when to boil over is sort of having that set schedule in mind where, I don't necessarily know that every fan that watches on YouTube realizes this, but, you know, every June is Absolute Justice. Every October is a CWF Rumble. Every November is Ultimate Survivor. Every December is Battlecade. Every, you know, you have those kind of milestones, and you can, it makes it easier to work backwards. You can stay organized a little bit better when you have, to me at least, when you have more of those milestones rather than just, like say PWG, for instance, which is not really a storytelling, you know, federation, but they may have, you know, the anniversary show in the summer, Bola in the fall. And are there any other yearly, do they do the DDT every year? I don't even know. But you know what I mean? Like, it's easier to have those kind of institutions where we know, okay, this is starting to feel right. This is starting to become a thing. You can just look to the next milestone and say, okay, we're going to hit the next big beat, you know, here. And sometimes it's cool to play with that. Sometimes it's cool to say, hey, we're going to do this on this, you know, random television taping that isn't a huge deal. We're going to surprise the people that come here expecting to see just a random television taping, because what you don't want is you don't want people to get the mentality that, say, for instance, the belts only change in June or in December. The belts only change at SummerSlam or WrestleMania. You don't want that. You want to have that, you know, things that surprise you throughout the course of the year. So the sort of institutions that are built into the schedule, the Weaver Cup every summer, the Rumble every fall, those kind of help me stay on track and help that umbrella storytelling, as you put it, because you have those built-in stops, so to speak, where something cool in the story can happen on those events.
Okay, let's talk to the Hardys. Now, if correct me if I'm wrong, but they drew your biggest house to date recently?
Pretty big. After Battlecade, Yes, they did. After Battlecade, I don't know if anyone listening has ever been in the Mid-Atlantic Sportatorium, but after Battlecade, we took a portion of the wall down where we have the main arena and then we have the lobby. There was a portion of the wall right by where commentary is that stuck out about 6 or 8 feet in the lobby. And we took that down so that we could add more seating, wherein literally you could just have seats. We could have overflow seats into the lobby after Battlecade, because at Battlecade, quite frankly, we could have sold more than we had. So we made the decision after that, and then we were blessed to have the Hardys, you know, there a month after Battlecade. And that was the first instance of using that sort of overflow seating capability. But the way things are rocking and rolling now, that I think that's going to be something that we see a lot of now, where we can open up seating into the lobby and fit more people in there, which is a nice problem to have.
Oh, yeah, definitely. Short answer, that's yes, awesome. Yeah, that's awesome. Now, let me maybe you can explain it better, or explain it to, like, some of the naysayers were saying, like, the Hardys were a little bit too protected in the match, in the booking of the match, where they looked really super strong. Can you kind of explain why you protect guys who draw money? Like, you can pretty much, the Hardys are aching to, like, the Hogans on the indies right now. I mean, they're money. Wherever they go, they draw big crowds. And can you kind of explain why you need to protect your drawing cards?
Well, yeah, I mean, it's just common sense, I would say. You know, and we have other people that are, you know, movers of the dial, you know, in one way or another, either, you know, being ticket sellers or being hype generators or whatever. So you never want to do anything that takes too much of the shine off of them. You want to, you know, you want to put them, number one, you want to put them in intriguing situations. You know, it would not have been in our best interest to have Matt and Jeff against the number men. You know, you want to put them in intriguing situations. You want to, you know, put them in anything that's not going to take the shine off them too much. And you got to know your audience, you know. The, you know, hypothetically, and I'll go back to PWG since I've already talked about them once. Hypothetically, if Matt and Jeff go to PWG and they wrestle whoever, that crowd is going to be looking for a different experience and a different investment on their time and on their money than a crowd, you know, somewhere like Greensboro, North Carolina, Raleigh, North Carolina, our demographic, quite frankly. It was a lot of families. It was a lot of kids. It was a lot of first timers. It was a look in audience. And it wasn't rocket science to say, you know, they want to see the Twist of Fate and the Swanton, you know, Hogan must pose. It's not, you know, there's no need to overly complicate things. And Matt and Jeff have been great, and I've had a great relationship with them since I was literally a child. They've known me forever, and they were down for anything. Certainly cast no aspersions on that. They were down to do anything we needed them to do. But it was, you know, stuff like that is easy to me, you know, because it's, you know, that the audience is there. The audience wants to see them do their stuff, you know. My favorite band of all time is Counting Crows, and I try and see them at least once a year, and I get that, and they get too, that, you know, there's a lot of people like me that want to hear the deep cuts, but there's a whole lot of people that just want to hear Mr. Jones. And I think the same thing carries over to wrestling. You're going to see those people. You're going to have those people that are going to want to see someone like Matt and Jeff in a really intriguing scenario for them. They want to see Matt and Jeff against, you know, whatever the hot thing on the indies is right now. But you're going to have a much bigger percentage that just wants to hear Mr. Jones. They just want to see the Twist of Fate and the Swanton and St. Elite. And so when you put that in consideration, you know, working with guys like Matt and Jeff are easy. You know, working with anybody that is that over is easy.
Right. And the thing I enjoyed about it was you have the Hardys and they give the other talent the rub. And the thing I came out of that match the most looking forward to seeing is a potential Eric Royal versus C.W. Anderson match, because I love their interactions in the match. I thought one of the highlights. Is this something we might see at the Sportatorium sooner than later, or later than sooner, or maybe?
I would say I would love to make that happen. I'd love to make John Scott's Roy Wilkins happen, which was another thing that we got the chance to kind of tease a little bit.
Yep.
Yeah, I'd love to see that match happen. If the stars align just right, I would say, yeah, I'd love to make either one or both of those matches happen.
I was curious, too, about when you guys were booking, when you kind of were creating, when you did the shows kind of in the Broken Universe. How different is that to do than a normal booking show?
Well, originally it was going to be very, very different because we had, you know, we were gifted this opportunity to work with Matt and Jeff, and knowing that they were going to draw a huge house for us, and knowing that, you know, this match would theoretically air on TNA. Perhaps it still will. We don't know. We haven't been told. So how do you lead up to that? How do you gear up for that? And so the idea, you know, came up to do something that would sort of fit in with the Hardy universe. And to be perfectly frank, we had a lot of elements and things outside the arena that were planned, that time and resources were put into, that didn't get to materialize because, just as fate would have it, it poured down rain all day the day of that particular event. So there were some elements that you saw in the first Apocalypto would have been recreated to see what kind of actions were in Picnic Camp. So that's just fun. It's just fun to play around with stuff like that and say, okay, Matt and Jeff are going to be here in 2 weeks or 1 week, whatever it was. You know, how do we hype that appearance? How do we have some fun with it? And how do we get to do something different? That's a big, big thing for me, is I, you know, putting together 52 weeks of television a year, putting together, you know, 30 to 40 live events a year. I can be very easily romanticized by something that's different yet good, because so many things, it's just naturally just sort of get to feeling routine. And you want to be able to introduce new elements to the show and new or just different ideas. So something like that was a pretty easy sell for everybody, because they knew it would be an unusual episode of Worldwide and unusual circumstances. And had we gotten to do everything that we planned to do, it would have really stood out and stuck out as unusual. But life is long. We run a lot of shows, so maybe we'll get to introduce some of those elements another time.
Well, you know, you talk about being different, Brother Stutz, and standing out. And first of all, props on the Outkast reference a little while back. That's always appreciated.
You know what song we're ending with, by the way? We're all set.
But second, you know, when you talk about being different and standing out, I think that's something that CWF has really made a point to do and a mission to do, especially over the last 12 months or so. And you know, when you look at people that have broken out, like an Andrew Evan or a Trevor Lee, and I'm wondering, for fans that are maybe new to the product and new to CWF, who know those names and might have been brought into the tent through those guys, who are some other guys that they should be keeping an eye out for the rest of 2017?
I think 2017 is going to be a big year for Eric Royal. I think the addition of our sister promotion, Nova Pro Wrestling, up in the Commonwealth of Virginia, has done a tremendous job of helping to spread Eric Royal's name on a national basis and putting him in the ring with David Starr and Tracy Williams and Donovan Dijak and Chris Hero and all these, you know, fantastic wrestlers that Eric has gotten the opportunity to get in there with on this run with Nova Pro, I think has only helped both his confidence and his literally just his reputation and getting his name out there. I think he's somebody that should be getting looked at in new places this year, and I think will be. I think Chet Sterling is going to be ready sooner than later to break out and go other places. I think Nick Richards wants it bad, and I think he's a unique guy. And I think he may not even 10 years in, I'm not quite sure if Nick has found his voice yet as a performer. And if he ever hones in on, you know, knowing exactly who he is and exactly how he should act so that it's natural, I think, you know, he's somebody that could take it to the next level. I think the Carnies, Kerry Offal and Nick Iggy, are tremendous. I'm looking to make them a big part of 2017 here. I think White Mike has got just the most unique sort of blue collar appeal to him. I think he's, you know, everywhere he goes, he just stands out, and he just, I don't know, people are drawn to him.
That PWX appearance he just made at the Rise of the Champion in the ladder match, he stole that match just straight off personality. When there was a lot of incredible flyers in that match, but to me, he was the one who came out and the crowd appreciated the most, and was based on personality, man. Yeah, great talent.
He came here. Literally, it was just one of those things where he rode with somebody who was booked, and we said, you know, what the hell, we'll take a look at him, put him in there, and even in a preliminary, you know, situation that was very much just kind of throwing something against the wall and seeing if it stuck, you know, coming out of that first time we saw him, we were like, holy crap, this guy's got something, this guy's entertaining, this guy's, you know, there's an opportunity here for this guy. And he's, to his credit, he's taken everything that has come his way and he's pivoted to make something of it. He's got a great story too, that I think we're going to get into in the next few months of CWF Mid-Atlantic and kind of really discovering and finding out who White Mike is. I'll close with that. I'll close that list with him, 'cause I think 2017 could be a big year for White Mike.
And Brett, kind of as we wrap up here, you talked about sister promotions to, just a minute ago with Nova Pro, and the last time you were on, I was not able to be here, but I, you know, as I do, I went back and listened, and you talked about a relationship with Chikara, someone, you know, it looks like you might be doing a little bit of stuff with this year, but you said that they were an inspiration, and you guys kind of started off around the same time. And you didn't get to go quite more in detail about that. I was hoping that we just did a big preview and review of the 17 and 18 seasons on our last episode, and just was hoping you can go in a little bit of more detail on that, like your relationship with Chikara over the years.
Yeah, I'm trying to remember when I always followed along. I was very intrigued by the whole Chikara thing, and especially. I shouldn't say I always followed, but once YouTube kind of became a popular thing in our lives, and I saw, you know, the promos that Eddie Kingston was doing, the promos that Larry Sweeney was doing, I really, really thought Hydra was unique and an interesting character, and Ultra Mantis, and I kind of got hooked from where people would just put promos online, honestly, and then reading the angle that they shot in, I believe, the ECW arena for the formation of the BDK, from that point on, I was following the product because I thought that was one of the more unique things that I had ever seen done, and how there was the element of sort of subterfuge in the babyface groups. They had infiltrated all these different aspects of the company. I thought that was really unique and really next level. And there were, you know, there's been guys that I've said, you know, I wish, you know, guys that have put a lot of time in that have been here forever. And I would say, you know, I wish, you had come along later because honestly, you know, watching the product and getting to know a great many of the guys, it's inspired me creatively to think outside the box and think in terms of you know, what a character can be. And a lot of guys, I think, especially on the indies, they get into the business with the idea of, you know, I'm going to be Cool Cal the Crusher, and I'm going to wear sunglasses and a leather jacket, and my finish is going to be the choke slam, and it's going to be awesome. And, you know, I feel like a lot of guys early in their runs, you know, get in those kind of mentalities. And I think the cool thing about Chikara on a little bit of a deeper level that maybe I don't know if a fan picks up on it or not, but as a content creator, I pick up on it, is their guys, simultaneously, they are a little bit removed from the stuff that they're doing, but in a way, it also makes them even more dedicated to it, because it's not, you know, Cool Cal the Crusher that you came up with yourself in your, you know, garage or whatever. It's, you know, you're going to be a dancing bear. And how does a dancing bear act? And what does a dancing bear look like? And what kind of moves might a dancing bear use? And so that's really interesting to me, because, like I said, I've come across guys in CWF that I was like, man, you know, he's been wrestling as himself for 8 years or whatever. And I was like, man, I wish you'd have come along 8 years sooner, because if you came along now, this would be your gimmick, and this would be your presentation, and this would be your thing, because I'm literally a more creative person from having sort of studied Chikara and studied the stuff that they do there. And I enjoy the style, which is unusual, because I'm a very sort of old school, you know, everything needs to make sense, why is there a camera there guy. That's my most frequent question when watching wrestling on television, is why is there a camera there? I ask that question at least 10 times a week watching WWE. So you would think I would not dig, you know, invisible grenades and things of that nature. But in truth, it reminds me of like a territory in a way, because they have set up the ground rules that apply to their universe, and they adhere to them very strictly. You know, these are the things that we deem to be plausible in our world. And I don't know, there's just something about it that really, really works. And there's been so many cool moments. I love, I was at a Chikara event in Richmond a couple of years ago, Icarus against Jimmy Jacobs, whenever that run would have been happening. And there was a very cool moment where Jakob Hammermeyer gave the Eye of Tear to Delirious, and the whole crowd gasped. And I was just like, that was a cool moment, because everyone in that crowd was, you know, for lack of a better term, well-trained as a fan. They were conditioned as a fan to know the significance of that, know what that meant, know what it meant to the story. And that's a tough thing to do, because you got to figure there were people there. You got to figure there were people there that had never seen Chikara before. I mean, right. There had to have been, but it didn't seem that way. It seemed like the whole damn room gasped in unison. And cool stuff like that, I'm very envious of. And I love the product. I love the guys. I have not met anyone from Chikara that wasn't a class dude and a total professional. I love our relationship with them. We had Mike Quackenbush down for a seminar in the end of January, and it was super. And it was super to see guys that have been doing this for 10 or 15 years. Clearly, you could literally see on their face that they were given a new way to think about themselves and about wrestling from learning from Quackenbush. And so that was really cool. Yeah, that's kind of a long answer, but I love our relationship with Chikara. I keep up with it all the time, and I think they're one of the coolest things going, because it's so unique and it's so cool to me.
Stutzy, you did it unknowingly, but you mentioning your issues with hidden cameras ties this whole episode together so perfectly. Steve and Nate know what I'm referencing, but that brings everything full circle. We want to thank you, as always, for taking some time out of your night to join us. We love having you as a regular guest here. We're going to have you on again soon. Any final things or last-minute plugs you want to get in before we wrap?
Definitely plugs. CWF Worldwide, new episodes drop every Wednesday night at 9 p.m. Eastern time. So Wednesday night, wherever you are in the world, or I guess it could be Thursday morning, new episodes of Worldwide drop. Subscribe to youtube.com/CWF Mid-Atlantic. Keep up with us every single week. We also upload classic matches from the archives. We've got stuff with, goodness gracious, Homicide, Kevin Owens, El Generico, Brian Kendrick, Paul London, Claudio Castagnoli. I'm sure I'm forgetting a half dozen more. But if you're intrigued at the thought of seeing any of those guys in the CWF ring, it all happened, and they're all on YouTube. So we encourage you to check them out. This weekend, I'll be at the Scenic City Rumble just outside of Chattanooga, Tennessee. Follow them on Twitter at SCI Tournament. If you're anywhere within driving distance to the Chattanooga area, you've got to come to the Scenic City Rumble. It's going to be an amazing collection of people from literally all over that are brought in. If you're within driving distance of the Mid-Atlantic Sportatorium, we will celebrate the 100th episode of CWF Worldwide next Saturday, March the 11th. The episode will air in April, but we're going to go ahead and have a big party and celebrate the 100th episode of Worldwide. Brad Attitude, Roy Wilkins, and Eric Royal to face Trevor Lee and partners of his choice. The Carneys will be back with us. Slade Porter will be back with us. A whole bunch more that I'm really, really looking forward to. It's going to be a really big night. And the end of March, Friday night, March 24th, Saturday, March the 25th, the Crinoda Brothers Cup Tag Team Tournament. Don and Rocky Crinoda are our sort of our local wrestling legends from right here in our hometown that have become, you know, world tag team champions of the 80s, Slaughter and Crinoda against Steamboat and Youngblood, the match that turned people away from the Greensboro Coliseum and was the inspiration for Starrcade. So we're going to honor our local hometown legends with this tag team tournament two nights, Friday night, March the 24th, Saturday, March the 25th, and then Saturday at 2 o'clock, we're going to have an interactive fan fest where we're going to do live matches. We're going to have a WrestleFest arcade game, video game tournament for the fans. It's going to be really, really cool. We've never done anything like this at CWF. So, you know, if you're ever thinking about checking CWF Mid-Atlantic out, if you're kind of on the fence, if you're from, you know, if it's going to require a plane ticket or a bus ticket or a train ticket, I would strongly recommend that. Again, you're going to get the most bang for your buck. You're going to get, you know, two live events and a really, really fun Saturday afternoon. So that's definitely the weekend that I'm encouraging, you know, anyone from out of state, anyone that's thought about checking us out, anyone that's kept up with us on YouTube but never come to the Sportatorium. If it's on your bucket list, that's the weekend to come, the Crinoda Brothers Cup. You can follow us on Twitter at CWF Mid-Atlantic. Follow me at Stutzy, and yeah, just keep, I appreciate you saying I'm a good follow. I try to be, yeah, just keep up with us, because man, there's a ton of stuff happening in and around the Carolinas, and I try to be part of just about all of it. So keep up with us and keep up with everything that's happening in the Carolinas, because it's a really fun time right now.
Awesome. And nobody plugs like Brad Stutz. Pete, I want to give you a second though, to plug your show. I mean, you're not going to touch that, but you want to give a second quick to talk about the split on the This Week in Wrestling?
Yeah, okay. So Bart is still This Week in Wrestling, Indies and International. We do a segment every week on CWF Mid-Atlantic. We review the YouTube show. Actually, most of the guys from the promotion have been great. They retweet it, and they give us feedback, and they've been really actually super supportive of the show, from Grant Sawyer to Kane Justice to Dirty Daddy to a whole lot of guys have all come back and commented and or tweeted it or what have you. And then the next one, it was me and Johnny Sorrow. Changed our name to Space City and NWA On Demand podcast, where we talk about the Houston streaming service. And we just got a really great a picture painted by our buddy Mario for our new new header, which looks absolutely fantastic.
It's gorgeous, so, yes, if you haven't seen it.
Yeah, so just check those two shows out. Follow me at Twitter at Titans O' Wrestling. We might be trying to change that name since it's retired, but none of us remember the password, so that might be a problem.
It's always how it goes. Yeah, and Titans Wrestling, if you haven't checked out the finale, I think I plug it enough on Monday on Please Sweet Podcast. But if you haven't heard it yet, go back and listen. It dropped last week. It is a perfect wrap-up to what was a beautiful, beautiful show. And I think this is a beautiful show, guys, as well. We're going to go ahead and close up shop. We'll be back in 2 weeks. We'll put the bow on Fastlane. We'll get Steve's live experience from going there, and we'll see what else is up and running in the world of wrestling. Of course, we'll be closing in on WrestleMania. So be sure to visit PlaceMania.com each and every day, especially for the next 31 days as we continue to roll out our 33 WrestleMania list in 33 days. Check that out. And until then, I'm JT. That's Steve. That's Nate. That's Pete. That's Stutz. And for Kevin Kelly as well. We're out. We'll talk to you in 2 weeks. Everyone take care.
She never got a chance to hear my side of the story. We was divided. She had fish fries and cookouts for my child's birthday. I ain't invited. Despite it, I show her the utmost respect when I fall through. All you, you will defend that lady when I call you.
Yeah. I'm sorry, Miss Jackson. Ooh, I am for real. Never meant to make your daughter cry. Jackson, ooh, I am for real. Never meant to make your daughter cry. I apologize a trillion times. Me and your daughter got a special thing going on. You say it's puppy love, we say it's foreground. Hope that we feel this way forever. You can plan a pretty picnic, but you can't predict the weather.